Blog Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black, tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Like last Thursday again, as the continuing resolution moves back to the Senate for another vote. Will the GOP Senate stand firm with the conservative A-team or cave with the surrender caucus? The House stood firm despite spineless little Johnny Boehner and little Eric Cantnot. They passed a sensible compromise continuing resolution. Democrats could seek to strip the two House amendments out, including the Obamacare delaying language and the elimination of the medical devices tax from the continuing resolution again. However, that should, just like last Thursday, require 60 votes, including the Democrat caucusing independents. Reid has only 54 votes. So if this happens, that Reid does it on a simple majority of 51 because of the Republicans' failure to stand with the A-team, it will be the Rhino traitors who are at fault. It will be McConnell's fault. If Republicans of the Senate feel the same grassroots tsunami pressure that got the rhinos in the House to behave as conservatives, maybe they're not conservatives, maybe they're still rhinos, but they behaved as conservatives, the Senate has the parliamentary tools to disallow Obamacare funding amendments by demanding a 60-vote threshold as opposed to the simple majority, which we know the Democrats and Harry Reid shilling for Obama control. The Republicans can force the defunding of this economy-killing disaster. Either some Democrats in tight races will vote with them to pass the CR without Obamacare, or it goes back to the House, which, given the fact that tomorrow is the deadline, it means Reid will be shutting down the government at midnight on Monday. But none of this is going to happen unless Americans of good conscience, from Occupy to Tea Party, from conservatives to libertarians, from honest liberals to the uninvolved, send a grassroots tsunami to the imperial city and demand limited government. This is not a partisan or ideological issue. It's not about health care nor insurance reform. It's a matter of survival. Are we turning back toward the republic or continuing to manage the decline of the West and accelerating down the road to serfdom and a police state at home and empire abroad? Liberty is yours to lose. Will you fight? Will you stand with the conservative A-team? Will you send in tactical support to the A-team? Send a tsunami. Or are you going to sit back and watch the Senate surrender caucus cave? It's all up to you. You are live with Rex and Tex. Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex, broadcasting to you from the Imperial City, where the shutdown showdown is ongoing, and the Senate vote begins tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern.
And this is Tex, broadcasting from deep in the heart of Texas, sitting in the Peanut Gallery, just watching the goings on in Washington and enjoying myself immensely. So, quite a week this week. I think a lot has happened that will really rally the base, which is good, particularly if you want to form a new Republican Party that is built around substance. But leadership isn't necessarily down with that. And so we'll see where we go from here. I think the safe money right now, I think, is on a government shutdown. But even that, I'm not 100% sure on. But I think the Democrats would like it because they think they're going to win. And they would be able to pin it on the Republicans because that's the mislearned lesson of the last major government shutdown, which is between Gingrich and Clinton. And I think the leadership of the Republican Party will do anything that they can to prevent that from happening because they're worried about the false lesson learned from the last time, and then in between are the people standing up for principle. But at the end of the day, I think, will this fight win to defund Obamacare? I don't think so, but this is the first battle in a larger fight that will continue on with the debt ceiling. So the thing here is to find the leaders of the resistance, if you will, and to locate the people who are going to stand up against this thing so that you can marshal those people for the next fight and have the people who stood in the way this time take some sort of penalty for the fact that they weren't on the right team so that they can change their tune the next time. Anyway, that's what I'm seeing out there, Rex, but what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, is it slim that this defunding thing is going to go through? Sure, but it is really not impossible. In fact, it's totally doable, and I think that it's the Republicans' victory to lose. It all really depends on McConnell, and the simple fact is that they said the same thing about Gingrich back in '95, that he couldn't get any of these things done, and after 21 days, Clinton had to come to the negotiating table, and we got a lot of good things done, which right now the media and Clinton, take credit for. So it's not that it can't be done. It's that there's little resolve in the Surrender Caucus, which is why I think grassroots pressure is the only way that's going to make it happen. And the way that you do that is you call them, because they don't really care what you think, but they do tally the yeas and the nays, and you need to have a massive amount of people saying, we don't want this thing. The squishes in the Senate believe that people are more afraid of a, quote, government shutdown than they are of, not defunding Obamacare, which is not true. The simple fact is it's government shutdown. The government's not going to shut down. The government never shuts down. I wish they keep talking about the shutdown. I wish it was a promise that they would keep and actually shut it down. All they do is furlough 800,000 federal employees and for a couple of days, and then put them back on the payroll, and then pay them back what they didn't earn while they were furloughed. So most of government is going to go on. It's all, quote, mandatory spending. But the way that you get these people is you call them at 202-224-3121. That's 202-224-3121, and you get other people to do the same. That's the Capitol switchboard. And that'll get you your senator or even your representative, but right now focus on your senators, and especially Mitchell McConnell, who's up for re-election in Kentucky, which is Senator Rand Paul's state. His phone number is 202-224-2541. That's 202-224-2541. And go to don'tfundit.com. That's one word, don'tfundit.com. Currently, we're standing at slightly under 1,910,000 votes. So we're within striking distance of 2 million. In a nation of 300 million people, which over 70% don't want this thing funded, that number should be significantly higher, but rarely does an online petition get 2 million people. So go there, get other people to go there, tweet it out, put it on your Facebook, email it to people, tell people, get them to sign it. The simple fact is we've done, I think, 5 or 6 shows on this now, and I feel like we're doing Thursday show all over again because we're in the same place. The Senate is got a showdown with a majority controlled by Harry Reid, who's I don't know, zombie, crypt keeper, desert mouse, desert rat, whatever the hell you want to call him, who's shilling for Obama simply to save Obama's face on his, quote, signature piece of legislation, a piece of legislation that they have already defunded and delayed for big corporations, for government employees, including the IRS agents who will be enforcing it upon the rest of us. Now they're starting to get there with the union, small businesses, but they're still keeping this individual mandate, and that's what this is about. Should, in fairness, since Democrats love to talk about fairness and equality, in fairness, should government, big corporations, and now even some small businesses be exempt from this thing while individuals are forced into purchasing a product from private companies through government exchanges against their will? That's the real question here, and it's just very odd that those on the left who always talk about fairness are completely okay with this simply because it's their guy in the White House. And people, you got to get off this team bullshit. Start looking at principles. It's not about teams. It's about what's actually being done. And we've got an A-team in there, a real solid A-team led by Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and Rand Paul that is fighting for you and that has the tactics, the tools, and the strategy. It's a victory for the Republicans to lose. And when Newt did this, he did it against a very popular, powerful, intelligent, capable liberal president. This guy is weak, incompetent. He's already been shut down on taking your guns because of grassroots. He's been shut down on the war in Syria, didn't blow up Syria and start World War III because of grassroots, and the U.S. Constitution. See, the thing about our system is it works if we work it. And, you know, people want things to get done, and D.C. is not working, and blah, blah, blah. Give me a break. It's supposed to work like this. It's called checks and balances. It's talking about coming to the table and negotiating. Obama says he won't negotiate. Reid says he won't negotiate. Well, that's not compromise. That's not negotiating. That's not leading. That's not legislating. The Republicans have compromised. None of us want Obamacare to be on the books, but we're willing to accept it and delay it for a year. That's all that's being asked for right now. That's a compromise. They need to accept it. Tex, do you think that that these squishes can be pushed into actually standing firm this time as opposed to what they did on Friday, which was capitulate?
No. To be quite honest, no. Because they don't really have an interest in this. And they don't like to be blamed for anything. They certainly don't like getting any sort of negative copy. And, you know, this goes back to what we were talking about, you know, over a year ago at this point about the leadership. And they claim to be the leadership, but yet they're not the leadership of us. And we are the grassroots of the party, so they're not our leaders, which means the Republican Party is a vast dysfunctional organization with leaders who are more in tune with what the other party is doing than what their own voters want. So, you know, these types of things are clarifying in the sense that you get to find out where people stand and when the hard votes come up, where people are going, where your elected officials are going. And I think it makes the, if you want to call it a civil war, which I think, you know, realistically, we coined that term over a year ago. If you want to call it a civil war, then these are the types of things that highlight who's in the insurgency and who's in the old guard. And, you know, I think it's time we need some new blood in the Republican Party. And, you know, I don't think Boehner, I don't think Mitch McConnell, I don't think, you know, Reince Priebus now is kind of playing a double game. I think he's realized that it's better to sort of be on the fence, particularly if you're going to lead the party, a party that's in disarray, no thanks to his leadership, to sort of be ambiguous as to which side you're on, if you're on any side at all besides your own side. But these things are clarifying, and I think that they'll help us locate real leadership in the future. But, you know, they keep saying that this comes down to, oh, well, we agree with, you know, Ted Cruz and everybody. We all want to get rid of Obamacare. And I'm so upset with him that he thinks that I don't want to get rid of Obamacare. But we just want to go about it a different way. Okay, what is your way? Could you enunciate that? Does your way involve you taking any sort of action about it whatsoever beyond talking? Or just stating that you're against it? See, that's the problem. Your way seems to involve nothing but complete capitulation, but going back to your constituents and stating that, well, we held a whole bunch of symbolic votes that we already knew the outcome of ahead of time to defund Obamacare, and I keep voting to defund it. Every time it comes up, I vote to defund it. You know, that's how committed I am. And every time it comes up to defund, I know it's going to be lost. and that it'll never be defunded, and that this is a program that we're all going to have to live with, right? But I have no actual interest in doing anything about it. So that really is the difficulty. Look, kick the can down the road. You know, just say nobody has to participate in this thing. Businesses are exempted. Private individuals are exempted. Everyone's exempted for a year. And in that year, go marshal the strength that you need to actually get rid of the thing, right? Because nobody wants the unions now are against it, for God's sakes. You know, look, the unions, for those of you who don't know, the unions are the Democrat Party. That's the grassroots of the Democrat Party is the unions, right? They do all the poll watching, all the, you know, all the major cities. A lot of the donations that the Democrat Party gets comes directly from unions. They're the bedrock of the sort of boots on the ground, you know, electoral battle that the Democrats have. And if you lose the unions, the Democrats sort of lose everything, right? Well, they're losing the unions on this one. The unions were behind it. And then, as Nancy Pelosi famously said, well, you know, we have to pass it to find out what's in it. Okay, well, so a bunch of morons went along with that formulation. What could possibly go wrong? The government's never lied to anybody ever, certainly not in history, period, and certainly not in American history. Nobody's ever been lied to, so we might as well trust them. And then they pass it, and the unit's like, hey, what's going on here, you know? I mean, among other things, you know, let's not just talk about that the unions are going to lose their, you know, gold-plated healthcare shit that they've had forever, okay, which they're upset about. Like, oh, I deserve to have something better than the average American because I'm the, quote, working man, which is code word for I have gold-plated protections in my, you know, job that I'm ensconced in that you can't get me out unless, you know, I'm like a termite in the barn. You got to burn the barn down to get me out of here, right? That's how strong my union protections are, right? Let's not go after that. The unions actually did serve a very important purpose, not just in this country, but actually globally for a long time when you had, you know, capitalism entrepreneurs were, you know, growing back at the end of the, well, I don't know if you even have to say the end, but in the 19th century was sort of the golden age of capitalism, if you will, and even into, you know, the early parts of the 20th century. During that period, certain advantages were taken of workers who didn't really understand their rights to the extent that they even had them back then. And so they fought for these rights and they established them. But one of the things they fought for, one of the hard things they fought for was a 40-hour work week. They fought a lot of fights over that. Used to, back in the day when we were all, you know, serfs on someone else's farm, you got one day off and that was called Sunday. And the other days you worked all day long from dawn till dusk. And one of the things the labor movement fought for was a 40-hour work week. Okay, so now what's happening under Obamacare is that the 40-hour work week is being undermined and lost because Obamacare basically punishes companies for hiring people for 40 hours. And so what it's doing is pushing everyone down to part-time work, which if you're a feudal serf, I guess that would sound pretty good. Like, hey, I only have to be out in the fields part of the time, right? But they were sort of, you know, serfdom and slavery is quite similar, which is why we use the word slave, because like Slav, because the Slavs are out working in the fields. But the reality is if you can only get a job working part-time, you can never be part of the real economy. You can never have anything like a decent living wage. And by undermining the 40-hour work week, Obamacare essentially is undoing what unions put together for, you know, low the past 100-plus years. And, you know, a century-plus worth of work is being undone by one shitty piece of legislation. And now that they've passed it, I guess they found out what's in it. And what's in it is a dagger pointed right at the heart of the labor union movement itself. And so, as I said, where is the constituency for this stupid law? The only constituency is
Cuba.
Obama. Yeah, exactly. The only constituency is Obama because this is the signature piece of legislation that he has because he has no other accomplishments to speak of in his presidency. And so the Democrats are rallying around because this is our guy and we have to save him, even though his signature piece of legislation is destroying the bedrock of our party organization itself. And so hear you. Is anyone reporting on that? Is anyone talking? No, they're talking about the Civil War in the Republican Party, which also is very interesting and something I care a bit more about. I don't care that, you know, the Democrats are jumping on their own sword over there and their organization's falling apart. But you don't hear about that as much because it's not interesting to the press. The narrative is the disarray of the Republican Party. But I would submit that politics in the United States right now is in complete disarray. The two-party system, well, is the two-party system itself in question? No. But the American people are at a point where they no longer believe in either of the two parties, and they're distancing themselves from both of them. And so on the surface, the two-party system is not in question. But I think deep down it really is, and I think a lot of Americans just think our whole system is dysfunctional, screwed up, and we need to find some new way of doing things, and whether that involves fixing the current two parties and continuing with that, replacing them with something else, or, you know, you're even seeing Mark Levin talking about, look, let's just have another state convention to propose some amendments and just strong arm Washington. I think these what you're seeing now are the seeds being laid of an arrogant political class that this country was never intended to have, laid the seeds where for years they abused the trust of the people, and they said, keep electing us, we'll go to Washington, we'll act in your interest, and they didn't do that for 30-plus, 50-plus years, whatever, whenever you want to go back to where they started losing faith. And now they've reached the point where they don't have credibility with the American people, and used to people said, well, I hate Congress, but I love my congressman. Now people are like, I hate Congress and I hate my congressman. Okay, that's not a good place to be. And so how do you put Humpty Dumpty back together again? Is that possible? I don't know. But I think what the fight you're seeing over this law is really a fight over larger issues that are going on politically in the country. So
without a doubt.
I think it's really interesting. It's definitely worth keeping your eyes open about, but, you know, as I've said multiple times, if you go around and you talk to people regardless of their political party and you talk about issues and you don't talk about the party, you will find that there's sort of vast agreement out there that people don't like D.C., they don't like what it's doing, and even people who are on the other side politically from you, they agree with you on a lot more things in principle than you would think.
Yep. That's because liberty is attractive. Liberty unites. The Constitution is true. And what you're seeing, Tex, I think what you highlighted is that the Constitution works, but we haven't been working it. So the political class, which there shouldn't be a political class in this country, the political class has kind of taken over the, quote, two-party system with this duopoly, and basically it's become a system of patronage where they play a theater show for us as far as rhetorical differences while they go along with the same agenda. And I think people have woken up and started smelling a stench emanating from D.C., and I'm not talking about the Anacostia River. And I think that that's why there is large agreement amongst people as to what's going on, unless they're totally partisan. They're either, you know, in love with, as you always say, elephant imagery, or they're still raptured with the Hopi Changi Obama, who's nothing more than a corporatist shill and a warmonger, but they'll still defend him. We did four shows, five if you include last Sunday's, basically about this topic, unpackaging and tearing it apart. If you want to hear them, just if you're on Blog Talk Radio, just go to the Tex and Rex show page, and on our main page you can scroll down, and every show we've done is there. You hit the link, it plays in your browser, plays in your mobile device. If you go below the scrolling graphics, there's a hyperlink that says download this episode. You right-click on that, you get an MP3. You play it in your MP3 device. You email it to people. You burn CDs. You take it to your Tea Party meeting, your Campaign for Liberty meeting, your Republican Party meeting, whatever have you, and get the information out there. And remember, sharing the show when you see it on Facebook or on Twitter, retweeted, that's the only way that anybody hears this. You know, we don't get paid to do this. It costs us money, and the only way that anybody knows about it is if you tell them. So please share it. Please retweet it. Get people to come and listen. And remember that just because you tell someone to listen doesn't mean you endorse the show. It doesn't mean you endorse our language. It doesn't mean you necessarily endorse our positions. It just means you want people to take a listen to a context and information that they're probably not getting anywhere else, especially these days for people who are conservative-leaning, who might be relying on the fair and balanced Fox News. Fox News is shilling for the Surrender Caucus. So, yeah. So they're shilling for the Surrender Caucus. It's confusing people. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say all this concern about language when, you know, you got the country doing poorly and going down the tubes and the economy sucks and, you know, no one can get jobs anymore. People are graduating with degrees from which they can't get jobs, that sort of thing. And they say, oh, my God, they're using improper language. Well, you know, at some point someone's going to get upset about some of this.
Yeah.
All I'm saying.
Well, yeah, it's a little upsetting sometimes. And here's the thing. On the Tex and Rex show page on Facebook. So if you're on Facebook, go to the Tex and Rex show page, like the page, and you will get notifications in your newsfeed when we're broadcasting, other action items, numbers to call, petitions to sign, things to do to move conservatism back where it belongs in D.C. as a counterbalance to all this chaotic statism and faux conservatism that's running around. And remember, an authentic conservative is two-thirds a libertarian. So you conservatives and libertarians learn to get along because, you know, we can go toe-to-toe and fight about all the differences later. But right now it's pretty much do you like the Constitution? Do you like liberty? If you do, start working with other people who do, even though you don't agree on everything, because otherwise you're going to lose it, and then it won't matter what your position is because you won't have one. Also on the Tex and Rex show page, if you scroll down and find a picture of a certain insipid member of the Surrender Caucus. His name is Senator Bob Corker from Tennessee. By all means, Tennessee, he's up for re-election. Fire the son of a bitch. There's a clip, a picture of him. It says Rhino Traitor, and right to his side is Ted Cruz looking at him quizzically. That link has all four shows that we've done on Thursdays this month, the conservative comeback obliterating Obamacare. This is not about a health care bill. This is about whether or not the Republican Party is going to actually be conservative slash libertarian, and about whether or not you're going to have a constitutional republic, or you're going to allow these cronies in government to give you theatrical choice, just like they did between Obama and Romney, who were exactly the same on just about every single issue, and continue to just expand the state and take away your liberties. You click on that pick, it has all four shows, plus what we did last week, which was TNT. Ted, not turncoats. These are worth listening to. I even did a shorter version of one of them, 79 minutes, that included a colloquy between Ted Cruz and Surrender Caucus Bob Corker and Mike Lee, where he was trying to derail Ted's strategy by lying, and Ted just laid it out for him and straightened it out. You know, Bob was confused about Senate procedure. Well, if you're confused about Senate procedure, maybe you shouldn't be a senator. Tennessee, retire the son of a bitch. What we're trying to bring you is information as to how this can happen, and you do not give up hope. Here's the thing. You can go for the low-hanging fruit. You can aim low. You probably hit your target. But why not aim high? If you aim high, if you fall short, you'll probably still end up in a much better place than you were before. What we're aiming for here is delaying the disaster, the jobs-killing, economy-destroying so-called health care bill for 1 year. The thing isn't even ready, so actually the conservatives are trying to do Obama a favor by delaying this thing so he won't have egg on his face, and so we won't kill the jobs, and then maybe, you know, we can actually get some sensible solutions in place and make this happen. Now, someone who often talks about sensible solutions, Tex, but he does it in such a way because he carries a big club, is joining us. Here's Chris, you're live with Tex and Rex.
Oh, man, are we still alive? Hey, Tex, how you doing, buddy?
Pretty good. How are you, Chris?
Good. I'm exhausted, to be honest with you. I getting deep into this thing, which you have to, you know, when you're doing a series of shows, you know, you kind of get caught up in the minutiae. And it was exhausting because it goes back to that same old battle of, are we going to be free? Are you going to keep the money you earn? Are you going to be able to make decisions for yourself and your family? or are you going to have a government interfere with every aspect of your life, every thought, every decision, every bit of data and information? It really comes back to that same fundamental argument. I'm surprised, and I still haven't quite got it, why we weren't fighting this 2 years ago, and why it was just rolled over with these, you know, felonious, you know, votes to repeal Obamacare that would never go anywhere, and why this wasn't done before. But I can't second guess God, I guess, you know, in that aspect. And it's here and it's now. And the battle is exposing what my favorite topic is. I'm not a Democrat basher because they are what they are, and they do what they say they're going to do, and they're organized, and they're unified, and they're all full of crap, and they all want to control every aspect of your life, but they're consistent in that. What I have always been frustrated by is what we saw in the Senate on the first passage. We're now back in the Senate. Was the Republicans who capitulated on this thing and caused all the problems that we have. You know, they want to blame Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and Rand Paul, but in reality, it was the Republicans who didn't stand strong and vote against Clothier that have given the leftist media their ammunition to beat up on the rest of us, the Tea Party, conservatives, libertarians, whatever you want to call them. Anti-federalists is one of my favorite terms. It's given them the ammunition to go after them. Now, I heard some good people out there today, whether it was Rand or Cruz or Lee or even the Bachman interview, where she stood strong against attacks on her, you know, taking on that issue of death panels again and, trying to make her look like a kook. And she stood strong. And that was good to see from Michelle, because I think she really got beat up in the primary and barely squeaking by and winning her seat again. But I'm fired up, and I'll tell you why. And I agree with what Tex was saying earlier. You know, we don't know the outcome. You know, win, lose, shut down, not shut down. Will the Republicans fold? Will they stand? We don't really know 100%. But what we are seeing is what all of us really that gave us a re-energized attitude about the GOP was the 2010 Tea Party, you know, movement, is people who are fighting and standing on principle and not taking the crap and getting out there and facing down their accusers and their liars, because that's what they are. I mean, I've listened to more Democrats in the last few days than I have in my lifetime, and that may be a little bit why I'm a little bit tired, so to speak, you know, a little burnt out. Because it's just disgusting. It's ridiculous lies. But the rhinos who folded, you know, I will say this for the 10,000th time, 2014, oust them. If they're not up until 2016, recall them. There's such a wave lifting right now, and Tex nailed it very well. Something's happening. We won the gunfight. It's not over. It's never over. You know, evil never,
never over.
Yeah, I understand that. But we won the gunfight. We won the Syria fight. Now we're on Obamacare, and they're lying their asses off, which shows they're scared. And they set this thing up from the beginning. Republicans are going to shut down the government, and they're starting to sound stupid. And you're hearing it if you watched the interviews that I watched today. They're starting to sound ridiculous. You know,
they always sound ridiculous.
They're good at repetition.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, is that if you tell a lie big enough and you say it enough times, people will believe it, and that's the Alinsky tactic that they use. And they're unified in their message. You're absolutely right, because evil is always organized. And they get their messaging from the White House, which makes you wonder, if the government does shut down, who's going to tell these idiots in the media what to say? You know what I mean? But but it's interesting because the way they ask the question is always to assume the answer, and unless the representative or congressman or senator is actually a conservative who believes what they're doing and is well versed, they can get tripped up. In fact, I got a little clip here. We're going to start with it because I got Daryl Issa, and the reason I'm talking about him is because, remember, this thing started in the House. Well, you know, started in the House, went to the Senate, back to the House. So we started in the House on Saturday, and then they voted early this morning, actually Sunday morning, to pass it. So this is the, it, just listen to the way the reporter asks ISA the question, and then ISA, you know, like a boss, just puts him in his place. It's a two-minute clip, but it really is a good way to tee up what's coming next. And we do have coming up a little word from the leader of the Surrender Caucus, Mitch McConnell, who wants Obamacare to be McConnell Care. I guess he's upset that Romney Care became Obamacare and he wants it back. So he's gonna, you know, it's going to become Rhino Care again. But we're going to have a little bit of to beat up on McConnell. So we'll play that and see how he's trying to position himself. And then we've got Rand Paul on Face the Nation and Ted Cruz on Meet the Press. The Ted Cruz thing is really long; it's like 18 minutes, but I broke it up. But it's just fascinating stuff. But just listen to the way the reporter asked the question and listen to ISA's response.
Speaker Boehner has said he would negotiate. Speaker Boehner has come up with an alternative after the Senate took up and ignored every aspect of the bill. So we're there trying to fund it. They could have had clean funding of the bill once. There'll be another opportunity for both clean funding and funding our military separately so that they not be part of this fight if necessary.
Is this your final?
The president is shutting down the government. He actually never gets a chance to veto anything. This isn't like
if you believe for a moment that he doesn't tell Harry Reid, I won't do it, when he says, I won't negotiate, it's very clear that the Senate is acting on behest of the president. Harry Reid is acting on that basis. So I don't think the president gets a pass like he eagerly would sign it if Harry Reid would just move it. I don't think anyone in your public believes it, so I assume the press knows better,
when
too.
When this fails, will you vote for a one-week clean CR?
How dare you presume a failure? How dare you? How dare you? Harry Reid. How dare you presume a failure?
Harry
Reid. The fact is, this country is based on people saying they won't do things, and at the end of the day, coming together for compromise. We continue to anticipate that there's an opportunity for sensible compromise. And certainly, the individual mandate, the medical device tax, these are the exchanges that are not ready. They don't even know what the cost is. There is a real opportunity for compromise, and I will not accept from anybody the assumption that we'll have failure. I believe we have a real opportunity to get the American people to realize it's time to delay this so it can be properly enacted. Our committee has shown danger in your individual information. Today, we don't even have protection of your privacy by those who are signing you up. If you went to sign up for the exchange, like every congressional staffer would have to, the person you go to sign up isn't even covered by HIPAA. So quite frankly, this is an important point for the American people. The president has given delays to unions and special interest, and he's not willing to give delays to the American people. I think that's outrageous, and I think the time for compromise is now.
The majority leader.
How dare you assume failure? That's what he told him. That was brilliant. He put him in his place, and that's the thing. The press, which is shilling for the corporatists and the lefties, and the Democrat wing of the Republican Party, and the Organizing for America, which is pretending to be the White House staff, are all playing this game with you. It's the way they ask the question. It's the way they ask the poll questions. They give you half truths, and so he says, when this fails, well, why should it fail? The Republicans did compromise. It's a delay of Obamacare. It's not a defunding or an elimination of Obamacare. And frankly, the president's been doing that illegally anyway. They're just actually doing it through the process. And everybody's worried about this anarchist Tea Party wing. Oh my God, what are they doing? This is how the process is supposed to work. This is why the founding fathers set up a bicameral Congress. This is why we have the processes we have for checks and balances. So we'll go to Tex first, and then Chris.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the media and the way the Republican leadership talked about this all throughout the brouhaha, if you will, is that, oh, this is an effort that's ultimately going to fail. It's ultimately going to fail. It's going to fail. It's going to fail. Okay, well, in the process of this, you had one Democrat who was like, hey, yeah, I'd go for a one-year delay on this. So you have the ability to start peeling people off if you stick together and if you speak as if you're going to win. Always aim for victory. Not for failure, but the leadership of the Republican Party the entire time has kept saying, this is going to fail, this is going to fail, this is going to fail. And so what is the incentive for someone on the other side to defect? Zero. Well, you only need four or five. Excuse me. Sorry to choke. You only need four or five people to defect in order to make it successful. But if you keep telling them ahead of time that it's not going to work, you're not going to encourage those people to do that. So the effort will fail. God, excuse me. Started I was going to choke for a second. But, yeah, so if your entire narrative, technical difficulties, biological difficulties, if you will, but if you begin the entire narrative with the fact that there's a doomed effort, then it's going to, you know, you are prejudging the conclusion, and therefore you will make it a doomed effort, which is exactly what they wanted from the beginning. The thing is, you have to find out who are the people who are doing this, who are, quote, on our side, and you'll get rid of them. This is why you have to be looking at who's running against John Boehner in his own district and go support that person. You have to go look at who's running against Mitch McConnell and go support that person. Who's running against Reince Priebus for the leadership and go support that person. Although Reince, all of a sudden, he's found some new religion. I don't think he's found any new religion. He's just realized his position is a bit more precarious than he thought. And so now he's going to play both sides of the fence. But he can do that with all these other people, too, because, look, John Boehner's a huge coward. He'll cave into anybody. He just needs to know who he needs to cave into. Just tell him, and he'll cave right away. So, you know, just start making these people, putting them on the hot seat. Once they get on the hot seat, like, oh, I don't want to be in the hot seat. What do I have to do to make everyone happy so I don't have to be on this hot seat, right? Well, you know, the problem is the base hasn't been doing this stuff. So they're caving to the Democrats because the Democrats are putting them on the hot seat. They got it in the frying pan, not us. So you know what? Either they're going to start doing what the base wants, or we're going to get rid of them, or there's no need for a Republican Party because basically it's an annex wing of the Democrat Party, and the Democrat Party just runs Washington and, you know, time to look for something else.
Yeah, well,
so
the
narrative,
party died,
control of the narrative, I think, is important. That's what I'm saying.
No, absolutely. Yes. I think, look, you're right, and we'll go to Chris next. Yeah, controlling the narrative, but, you know, controlling the narrative rhetorically is one thing, which is what the Republicans typically try to do, or controlling the narrative in actuality based on what you're actually going to do, which is what the, quote, anarchist Tea Party, you know, right-wing extreme fringe of the party, which is where most of America is actually doing. And you know, here's the thing. Whether you like what they're doing or not, you have to acknowledge the fact that this is what they were elected to do by the people who voted for them. This is what they said they were going to do, and now they're actually doing it. Rare is it these days that a politician actually goes to Washington, does what they say they're going to do, and so what does the establishment do? They go apeshit and try to stop them. So we'll go to Chris to comment on ISA.
Oh, and, you know, and I just want to point out before we get to Chris real quick, have you guys raised the whole issue of when Ted Cruz decided to have his filibuster of this bullshit bill, that they started, the Republican Party, and mostly Karl Rove and his minions, started releasing negative information about Ted Cruz out to the press.
Mm-hmm.
In order to try to discredit him, Republicans started doing that to a fellow Republican who's standing up like, oh, we want the same thing. We just want to do it a different way. So since this guy's doing it his way and he's not doing it by checking with the leadership, we're going to go release all this negative information on him in order to try to torpedo him, right? What is your way, asshole? You know, I would like to ask you that. What has your way been all these many years? Like, don't – John McCain, he fought against it from the very beginning. Rhetorically, I'm sure he did. Realistically, was he trying to find a way to actually stop this stuff? I don't think so. You know?
Yes.
And I understand that back when this stuff passed, they had, you know, veto-proof majorities in the House and Senate and everything, so it was a difficult struggle, right? But once you got the Tea Party came in 2010, did you try to work with that in order to shut it down? No. John Boehner went around and tried to eliminate Tea Party candidates who had been elected into various positions. He tried to change their districts and get rid of them. Yeah, that's Karl Rove. So to go back and say, oh, we just want to do it a different way. No, you don't want to do it a different way. You tried to get rid of – we gave you the weapon to go get rid of the thing. And the first thing you did was you tried to bury the weapon we gave. Like, oh, my God, what are we going to do with this thing? Get rid of it. They're not on our side. They don't want to get rid of this thing. They just want to say they want to get rid of it because they're on the other side. You know why? Because it gives them more power. They're the party of government. John McCain is the party of government. There is no Republican Party for John McCain. There's no Democrat Party for John McCain. There's only the party of government, and he's in it, and he's serving in it. The purpose of the party of government is to increase the amount of, yeah, is to increase the amount of money it makes, to increase the amount of power it has over you, so that you have to give it more money, so you have to go to John McCain more times in order to do what you want to do with your own fucking life, so that he can sit up there like some kind of godfather and dictate to you how to live your life, because that makes John McCain feel important and other people like him. That's the party of government. They're not trying to turn power back to you. They don't care about you. You're just there to be manipulated by their media apparatus, which is owned by the banks.
Yep. Yep.
You nailed it.
Yep.
I mean, you absolutely nailed it. You know, I posted something earlier about, you know, Twitchy, you know, that Michelle Malkin, you know, consolidates tweets and, you know, so that she can help people focus
on certain
battles.
I thought you were talking about Harry Reid. I thought you were talking about Harry when you said Twitchy.
No, that's squeaky. That's squeaky. But anyway, one of the things, McConnell got up there and said, hey, I voted against, you know, Obamacare. And he got hammered on Twitter because people get it. And I remember when we first started this discussion about, you know, and I've said this before in other shows, I don't want to be repetitive, but it helps, you know, people understand this. Most people do not understand how the Senate runs and how disruptive Harry Reid has been against the House Republicans, who we put in there, you know, to affect change, you know, to cut government, cut taxes, you know, get rid of Obamacare, you know, reform things. I mean, that was – they work on a lot of platforms. I mean, they put out a lot of bills, and then Harry just sticks them in a desk and says they're not coming to the – you know, coming they're not coming to the floor. This guy is the most obstructionist person I've seen in a long time. You know, he, and then they beat up the Republicans saying they're not their do nothing group and they're not getting anything done, and because they have a revolt going on inside the party and blah blah blah. But in reality, when so many people did not understand the Senate or the Senate rules or how Reid operates or how a handful of Republican rhinos, you know, have empowered Reid and kept a boot on the Tea Party or on the freshmen and the guys who want to get some reform done. And this has exposed the Senate. I like it. Like I said, I don't know where it's going. Who the hell knows? But it has really brought in a lot of focus to the Senate. And it really has exposed the rhinos. Those 27 guys, 25 plus two who didn't vote, you know,
that's
Flake
just
and,
a weak way of threading the needle. Flake and the other guy, well, I can't remember who was, but I'll get it for you. It
starts with an L. Yeah, it's on my on a post somewhere. But those 27 guys have been exposed.
It was Orrin Hatch.
Orrin Hatch. Yeah, I remember the O. But you know, there's been a bright spotlight shined on them, and through social media and focus on this fight, they've been exposed. So now we got two things happening in 2014. And a lot of these guys are being primaried, and I need to get that data together. It's just trying to keep up with all this crap. But, you know, who's actually being primaried? Because there's a lot of them being primaried. Some of them are not up until 2016, and there's actually recall petitions starting on some of these guys, Flake, McCain, you know, and that fires me up because that means people are fighting again, because I really think people – kind of, and we've seen it in social media and the shows and everything else. We've seen it kind of fade and get kind of quiet, and we feel like we're working 10 times harder than we did in the primary and not as much results. Well, people got burnt out. They got dejected, you know, and Obama won again, which we all knew was going to happen anyway, so it didn't affect us like it did a lot of people. But a lot of people kind of crawl back in their holes and hunker down. Oh, my God, you know, the world's coming to an end, and, you know, four more years of Obama. And the fight was just beginning. And so it's good to see people engaging again, because that's what this country's about. Right, wrong, or indifferent, agree or disagree, what is going on in Congress right now is exactly what the hell our framers put this country together for. And that's a good thing. Now, the media, I don't like what the media is doing. I don't like the control they have over the dialogue and the message. And that's something that people have to change. They have to quit listening to that crap. They have to quit. The only reason, and I said this, I don't know, last show or whatever, but I've said this before, the only reason I even watch it in mainstream media is just to be tuned up, you know, for the shows. Otherwise, I don't watch that crap at all. Never have, never will, never wanted to, and I don't desire. I figured these people out 30 years ago, you know, who they were and what they stood for. So it's never been a part of my life. But being in the, you know, you have to be aware of what the enemy is, how they're playing. But until people quit watching the news and buying newspapers and buying magazines and start learning how to use the internet and get in the right groups and the right, you know, web groups, whether it's Tea Party this or that or the other, you know, follow the right people and get the right message and learn how to pass that message on. When that happens, we have won. Now, I see it climbing. It climbed in the Ron Paul revolution, but it wasn't a thorough indoctrination through the whole system of the right, you know, the Republicans, libertarians. It was in the Ron Paul revolution. Now I see people starting to learn how to use those tools throughout the party, throughout the independents, and across the board. That's good. And if it keeps climbing from this point forward and Obama keeps abusing people and Reid keeps screwing people and screwing the Senate, keeping things from happening, it's just going to get bigger. And that fires me up.
No, you're absolutely right, and Chris's point is very valid. Listen, people, the alternative media, which has also got, you know, a lot of misinformation in it, but the alternative media is where you have to go if you want to get the truth, and you got to cross-reference your sources and double-check everything and apply some critical thinking. A great place to do that is Chris's group, Coalition of Freedom on Facebook. It's a little different than every other group where everybody just posts all sorts of crap. He's got these big graphics of the major topics, like whether it's, you know, the Senate bill, the House bill, Syria, Obamacare, whatever it is. And then there's a lot of
finances,
related articles, clips, videos, you know, finance, the Fed, clips, videos, and conversation analyzing it. And one of the great tools that's available is that, you know, someone will be having a discussion with somebody, whether it's on Facebook or in person or at a meeting, and they might not be able to articulate a certain point. They'll bring that to the group and ask for help. People will come in and explain things and provide them with data, and then they can go do it. So it's a very powerful place. So check it out, Coalition of Freedom on Facebook. And what you and Tex were just talking about, and Tex brought up that Chris Wallace admitting that the opposition research against Cruz was delivered by Republicans to Chris Wallace, which is, I think, Karl Rove shit his pants when Chris Wallace admitted that on Fox News. I haven't heard it since. I guess they scrubbed it. But we had that on the last show. We played the clip and we analyzed it. Please check it out in archives. Our archives are always available to you. Just go into Blog Talk Radio, which is blogtalkradio.com, search out Tex and Rex Show, and then you'll go to our page, and our page will have the upcoming broadcast, if there's one posted, which I usually post the same day we're broadcasting. And then below that, it'll have all the previous broadcasts. You can sort by relevance, alphabetical order, by date, whatever. But every show is available. You just scroll down there. You click on it. It plays right in your browser or your mobile device. Or, like I said, you go below the scrolling graphics, and you click download this episode. You get an MP3. Some of the shows are from, you know, the convention. Some are from the election. Some are from the debates. But a lot of them are general topics. We've done shows on the Fed. We've done shows on finances. We've done a shitload of shows on Syria because we were about to start World War III. And now, of course, the bulk of our shows have been about this so-called Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, which doesn't protect any patients and is not affordable. And it's not really about that. This is about a leftist ratchet that's trying to take you down the road to serfdom, and it is about a conservative resurgence, not a Republican resurgence. Who gives a shit about the Republican Party? The Republican Party died August last year in Tampa, and it's dead. It's been dead. It died again when they reelected little crying tan useless beef jerky Johnny Boehner as Speaker of the House, and it died again when they reelected little Prince Pubic as RNC chair instead of even attempting to nominate Mark Willis to challenge him. So the real question is, are you going to leave it dead and try to build up a third party, which will take you 20 or 30 years? The libertarians have been at it for 40 years, and they got 1.4 million in the last presidential election, and they have a few seats, but nothing much to speak of, which means Democratic dominance for the next 40 years. Or are you going to resuscitate this party instead of as a surrender caucus as the A-team with Cruz and Paul and Lee and Gowdy and Amash and Gohmert and Issa and these other real conservative Republicans that are fighting up there for what matters? Now, you know, this gets confusing to people because the Republicans generally suck at messaging. The Democrats are very organized at messaging, which is why they're already working on 2016 on the ground, okay? And the Republicans do these, you know, like ORCA program. They spend billions of dollars and it doesn't work. You know, they run around putting out fires and doing autopsies and all this kind of crap. But they've got no game. But when it comes to beating up on conservatives, the Republicans suddenly get really good at messaging. If Republicans would spend as much time beating up on the opposition as they do beating up on conservatives in their own party, you might have a chance. And that's what it's about. Now, here's another fake Republican. This is the huckster on Fox News, and he's got McConnell on there. And listen to McConnell's blathering and positioning and messaging. It's a 3.5-minute clip. We'll come back and text, and Chris and I'll comment on the other side.
Despite Ted Cruz's 21-hour speech, the Senate passed a stopgap funding bill that included Obamacare money. Joining me now is Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky. And by way of full disclosure, I have endorsed Senator McConnell in his bid for re-election. Senator, thanks very much for joining me. And let me start with a question regarding how the Senate might react to a House bill if it delayed Obamacare for a year, stripped out the medical device tax, and things such as that.
Well, I think all the Senate Republicans would be enthusiastic about a bill that did that. And I think it's important to remember earlier in the week that procedural stuff was a little bit confusing to people. Every single Senate Republican, without exception, voted to defund Obamacare. And we were all on the same side when it came to Obamacare. This is an issue that has not divided us from the very beginning. We'd also be in favor of any other version of that, too. If defund can't get any Democrats to vote for it, you know, if the medical device tax were in there. It's interesting to note, earlier this year, 79 senators voted to repeal the medical device tax. If the Senate were to receive such a bill from the House, it would be really tough for all of those Democrats who earlier in the year voted to repeal the medical device tax and certainly decide not to.
You know, this week, the Republicans that maybe had a different point of view about the strategy, not about Obamacare, but about the strategy to defeat it, folks like you were called Rhino, Squish, a member of the Surrender Caucus, and other things that I can't repeat on television. So tell me, what is it that really happened? And try to walk us through the procedure of the cloture vote, which is a 60-vote threshold, versus a simple majority, which I think you favored, which would have only required 51 votes to have defunded Obamacare.
The problem with the strategy that was advocated is, had it been followed, the Senate Republicans would have shut down the government. Polls indicate that 80% of Americans are opposed to a government shutdown. So we didn't feel, at least I didn't, and a majority of my Senate Republican colleagues didn't feel, a strategy that led us to a government shutdown was going to be a winner for us. And, of course, if you did that, Obamacare would still stand, because most of Obamacare would be unaffected if you had a government shutdown. So we wanted a strategy that could actually get an outcome. And when we had an opportunity, actually, to vote on defunding Obamacare, every single Republican voted to defund Obamacare. The problem had, Mike, is a math problem. There are 54 of them and 46 of us, and 54 is more than 46. And so the Senate Democrats got their way. That's a simple mathematical problem.
Condescending prick.
If Obamacare stands, you have said you think it will fall on its own accord, by its own weight, I think was the exact phrase. What do you mean by that?
It can't possibly work. It's creating chaos all across the country. We have a record number of part-time jobs. Insurance premiums are going up. The promise the president made, if you have a health care plan you like, you'll be able to keep it. That's not happening. None of the promises are coming through. It's chaos in the healthcare provider world. Almost $1 trillion in tax increases and reimbursement cuts to hospitals and hospice and nursing homes and home health care and the like. Chaos all across the country. This won't stand. You know, it may or may not be ended this week, and I think that's unlikely given who's the president and who's running the Senate, but it's going to crack and it's going to fall, I guarantee you.
Well, I know President Obama.
I guarantee you that he's going to cave unless you pressure the hell out of him. So, gentlemen, what did you think? You know, there he is basically throwing Cruz under the bus, being condescending towards the American people by saying 54 is more than 46, and then telling you that he voted to defund Obamacare. No, he didn't, because he voted for cloture along with 26 other losers, and that means that they capitulated and gave Reid all the power to strip out the defunding language, but they voted to defund Obamacare. Who cares? An empty vote is an empty vote, right?
Tax.
Guys?
Tax?
All right, Chris.
We losing?
I don't know. I'll check.
Yeah, I'll find out if we lost him. Basically, people have to understand what that close your vote is about. When they voted for that, and those 27 or 25 plus two who didn't vote, voted for that option. What they did was they lowered the threshold for the Senate Democrats to control the Senate. And so listening to McConnell, I have not heard this clip yet, but I do know that he voted for cloture and against Reid's plan, which was basically put Obamacare funding back in the plan before it went back over to the House. And I realize more and more and more that these old school rhinos, and I call them the Bush era rhinos, you know, who set us up, took that first quantum leap into insanity that Obama is now going to, you know, triple down on in expenditures and government growth and everything else and potentially wars. But basically, they were afraid of a shutdown happening, and that dictated their vote. They gave the power away to the Democrats, and then they voted no because he said the numbers, you know, they got this number and we have this number. So they knew they would lose the vote anyway, and he would push it back to the House when
they
had to pick it up again. That was a fear-driven. Go ahead.
Exactly. And sorry, I was disconnected. I reconnected.
That's all right.
Every time that happens, I have to get unmuted again, which sometimes Rex doesn't know when that happens. So for the listening audience
keep
out
dropping.
There. Yeah, exactly. Well, if only I had that kind of control over the technology. But anyway, so, yeah, you know, 56 is or 57 is more than 46 or whatever it was he was saying. Oh, it sounds like the job of the Speaker of the House is really complicated. Apparently, all you have to do is count the votes and then like, oh, okay, that's the vote, so that I'm done. You know, there's nothing tactical. Robert Byrd famously ran the Senate through understanding of the rules and being able to use the rules to his advantage even when he was in the minority. Newt Gingrich is able to do this in order to control the House. But John Boehner, apparently what he does is he adds stuff up. He's like, oh, they got the votes. We got the votes. Okay, well, I'm done. That's it. That's all he does. There's nothing more to the job than that. Apparently, once you have a first-grade education, you can add up to 100. You're essentially done, or in his case, he has 435, but whatever it is. So once you can add, you're done. You can now be Speaker of the House. That's the only, you know, skill that you need. So, you know, I think it's an abdication of leadership, as we've seen with John Boehner and his speakership throughout its entirety, is he doesn't really know what he is doing. He wanted to be Speaker of the House, and now that he's Speaker of the House, he basically is sort of a hostage of either the Democrat Party or the, quote, radical Republicans on the right, the extremists. But he doesn't know what he's doing. He's not in charge. He doesn't have his own agenda that he's trying to get through. He doesn't want to do anything with it, which is why he completely blows with the winds. All he wants to do is, oh, what's possible, what's not possible. You know, he doesn't have an agenda. He doesn't care passionately about anything that he wants to get through and that he would fight tooth and nail in order to make happen. All he wants to know is, oh, okay, do they have the votes? We have the votes. Okay, well, we'll hold a vote now, and then boom, okay, so that vote went through. I mean, he's a manager. That's all he's doing. He's not trying to accomplish anything. He's just trying to find out where is everybody on this. Okay, then that's where everyone is, so they'll vote on it that way. He's not trying to control anything or change opinion or enact, the Republican Party agenda. I mean, he could be anybody. He could be in any party. It doesn't matter to him. And so it doesn't matter to us. That's why he's got to go. He's useless as a speaker. You know, you want people who have a vision, who when you're voting for them, they have a vision. In the parliamentary system, you have a party that is in power and a party that is out of power. And what that means is the party that is in power can accomplish whatever it wants without veto. It just does it. We saw this with when the Democrats had a veto-proof majority. That's the closest we've come in a long time to a party in power. And they're just able to do what they want.
And then when the people don't like it, the next party comes in and they do whatever they want. And when people don't like that, they vote for the other side. Well, John Boehner isn't like that. He's just, he doesn't care. It doesn't matter what gets enacted. He has no passion one way or another. He's just like, oh, okay, well, I guess we have the votes for that. So let's bring it up for a vote, you know? Not, wow, I adamantly stand against this and I don't want to see this happen. And so I'm going to do everything in my power in order to ensure that, you know, the vision that I have for the direction the country should take is accomplished. But, you know, he just goes up there and gavels crap in and gavels it out and then wonders why nobody likes him or why he's unpopular and why people want to get rid of him as speaker. He's a disaster.
He gavelled in the illegal rules in Tampa the same way, reading off that teleprompter. Eyes have it, you know. I mean, you're right, Tex, and it's, you know what? It's up to Ohio. Everybody listening who knows somebody in Ohio, or if you're from Ohio, y'all have to put him down because, I mean, the only answer to anything that John Boehner says, even though, look, he's talking conservative now and the House is moving conservative, that's got nothing to do with John Boehner. That wasn't John Boehner leading. He leads from behind. Remember, he told the president we're ready to be led. He leads from behind. He's just like Obama. He's a political animal who just wants to hang out in D.C. and go to the cocktail parties. You pushed him there. The grassroots tsunami pushed him there. Now you got to push McConnell there. But the only answer to what anything that Johnny Boehner says is...
Shut up, boo!
Exactly. And in Ohio, this is what you need to do. You need to put him down.
Shut up, boo!
It's time to quit jammering before I start hammering.
You know, get rid of John Boehner. But the most important thing to do right now, because, guys, the vote, or at least deliberations on these things, begin tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern time on the Senate floor. And it's up to you, Mr. and Mrs. America, it's up to you to put pressure on the Surrender Caucus, the rhinos, the squishes, all the stuff that Huckabee said that McConnell was called. McConnell was called that stuff because that describes him appropriately. And just to be clear, he was called that on Facebook, on Twitter, on this show many times, and everywhere else. But you know who didn't call him any of those things? Senator Ted Cruz. Senator Rand Paul and Senator Mike Lee. They're gracious, and they're working with them. But these people are squishes. They are rhinos. They are the Surrender Caucus. And the only way they're going to stand firm is if you pressure them. So make sure you go to www.don'tfundit.com. Get that number up over 2 million. Numbers matter, because if 2 million people sign a petition, that means 20 million agree with it, even more than that. We know that most of the people in this country don't want this law, including the people who initially supported it for what it stated it was going to do, that have now realized it's not doing it. A delay would actually be a benefit to everybody. But they're playing politics. This is all about 2014. The Democrats want to blame the Republicans for a shutdown, and the Republicans don't want to be blamed for a shutdown. Well, when we had a shutdown in 95, it was pretty good. I mean, what do you think is going to happen? You think, like, all of it, you know, because they're going to shut down the Park Service, that the bears are going to die of starvation, the water's going to evaporate, the trees are going to die? You know, I mean, what do you think is going to happen if they shut down the government? Nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to change. Just, you're going to have 800,000 federal people who are doing stuff
those
that you don't even want them to do.
Those forests can take care of themselves unless there's forest managers out there managing the
forest. When Columbus got here,
they
who was taking care
doing.
Of the forest?
They're just
trees. You know, who was taking care of who? Tex, who was taking care of the trees when Columbus got here?
A dedicated team of forest managers who had been waiting for thousands of years for Columbus to arrive.
Squirrels.
And when he arrived, they handed over
squirrels.
The keys to him.
well, you know,
thank you,
I mean,
for arriving.
I think that it goes back generations. Before Columbus, the Romney family arrived here. They took care
of it. I love this state. It seems right here. Trees are the right height.
Oh, I know.
So, look,
as long as
you got a Romney to take care of the trees, you don't have to worry about the government shutdown.
You know, I heard a band say that there is unrest in the forest. There is trouble with the trees. The maples want more sunlight, but the oaks ignore their pleas. Anyway, I digress, though.
Well, hey, will Yogi Bear still be smarter than the average bear if the government shuts down? And here's the other question.
He might be better because he won't be educated at a government school. He'll probably actually learn something.
Yeah.
Besides,
well, I mean,
Eddie Theft and Sidney Theft is stealing.
Hey, boo-boo. I mean, the real question is, what are you worried about? You know, they tell you, people are trying to go to work, but if the government shuts down, what's going to happen? When was the last time you needed the government, unless you're one of those 800,000 or whatever, you know, federal employees or a contractor that you know, works for them? When was the last time you couldn't get to work or your business or get your kids off to school if the government shut down? I mean, what is this insanity? I mean, you know, the real question is the NSA still going to be spying on my emails if the government shuts down? Will the TSA still play with my balls if the government shuts down? Who cares? You know, the bottom line is, if it shuts down, it's going to be for a few days. We're not going to get 3 weeks out of this. These people are such pussies, it's not going to last that long. But maybe it'll actually bring Reid and Obama, who both clearly said they will not negotiate with the Republicans. They'll negotiate with Al-Qaeda. They'll negotiate with Iran. They even negotiate with Putin, but they won't negotiate with the Republicans. Yeah. They won't negotiate. Well, that's another question. Will Al Qaeda still be getting funded to rip people's hearts out and eat them by the U.S. government if the government shuts down?
Is that in the hard line? Is that in the hard line budget, or is that? Oh God, what a mess!
Well, we got here because people weren't doing their job. Remember something: when you hire a representative by voting, okay, that's not the end of your duty. You have to enforce the Constitution. If you don't, then you get this mess. And we haven't been doing it for so long, but people are beginning to wake up, and the country is moving in a rightward direction, which is why they're trying to paint – I mean, Tea Party anarchists? Seriously?
Anarchists, I know.
I'm sorry, that's an insult to all anarchists and ANCAPs around the world, because Tea Party people are not anarchists or ANCAPs. And if I was an anarchist, I'd be pissed that we were being painted with the Tea Party label. But it's not that big a deal. What it does is it forces negotiations. That's precisely why the Constitution is built the way that it is. You're actually starting to see the Constitution work for once, and people are freaking out about a government shutdown. Who cares? The government's been broke for 40 years anyway, and they're talking about, you know, running out of money. They ran out of money a long time ago, and they're running trillion-dollar deficits. You know, shut it down. Big deal. It's not the Republicans' fault. This is clearly on Reid's head. If the government shuts down, it's because Reid will not negotiate on delaying a bill that his boss has already delayed multiple times illegally, just for one more year so that we can get some things straight. It's fascinating to watch because the narrative is insane. Would you agree with that?
Who are you asking?
One of you? I don't care, one of you.
Absolutely, I agree. Yeah, the narrative is absolutely screwed up. And, the thing is, what you have is a total lack of leadership, people who don't care about the outcome.
Bingo.
Because what they want to do is they want to go along to get along, and all they want is positive coverage in the press. And they don't realize that the Washington Post is not being read, that the New York Times is not being read, that Newsweek is not being read, and that nobody's really watching MSNBC or CNBC, and all these people walking around Washington, D.C. is, I'm so-and-so, and I have a big show on MSNBC, or I have a big show on CNBC. They're nobodies because nobody's paying any attention to them. You're defined by the audience that you can reach. But the Republican Party leadership, they're stuck in this time warp back in the 1960s where, oh, my God, Bob Woodward was able to take down President Nixon through the Washington Post. That's how important the press is. That's the power of the Fourth Estate, you know. Well, the Fourth Estate went ahead and corrupted themselves because all power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely, blah, blah. Everybody already knows that. But then the press went crazy with their newfound power in the fact that Woodward and Bernstein were able to actually – get Nixon out of office. Now, they weren't single-handedly able to do that. It was just sort of a marshaling of a lot of interest around people who already had it out for Nixon from long before Nixon ever became president. But the press decided that advocacy was the way to go and that they now control the agenda, because think about it. If you can, with your power, knock a president of the United States out of office, the most powerful position on planet Earth, that means you must be more powerful than them, right? And so the press decided that they're more powerful than the president and Congress, and there's no constitutional limits on them, right? So they decided that they run the agenda in Washington, right? And so the Republican Party leadership acts as if they do, because until it's proven that they don't, they're going to assume that they do.
because they can remove anybody from office, and you see this with these minor scandals that come up every now and then. Most recently with Karl Rove's attempt at OPPO, research being released to the press on Ted Cruz, because Karl Rove doesn't like what Ted Cruz is doing, so he's going to use the power of the press, which, according to the press, is the power to remove a president in order to get rid of somebody who's inconvenient to him. And so the press is out of control, but they've misused their power. And in the process of misusing their power, they've abused their trust. And so people no longer trust the media, and people no longer go to them for the news, and which is why their audience is shrinking and dwindling. You know, it's like a bar of soap in the shower. It just disappears every day. I don't know where it goes, down the drain, you know. But it went somewhere else, people being empowered through other means of communication. But the Republican leadership, all they do is they sit and they read that crap and like, hey, look, I got three positive sentences about me, or semi-positive. You could read that verb. That verb is kind of ambiguous in a way, but you could probably read it. Most people read it this way, and it probably means something good about me. So I must be doing a good job, so it's probably going to help my reelection. Anyway, you know, the country's going down the tubes, and my party's agenda is completely destroyed. But, hey, I got two positive words about me in a printed newspaper that nobody actually reads before. And that, my friends, is how your party is being run.
Into the ground.
That's why nobody likes it. Yeah. That's why party dissatisfaction. Dissatisfaction is so great. That's why people are dissatisfied with Congress. And most people identify as being independents.
Just people yeah, like, we should all be independent. Go ahead.
I have a question for you guys. Well, I've been following as much as I can in the time limit I have. And has anybody heard Priebus say anything about what's going on? I haven't seen him mainstream on anything.
Yeah, he had an article that was printed somewhere, but in a safely conservative outlet, which said something to the effect of, what Ted Cruz is doing is interesting. Or something fairly banal. I'm going to try to dig it up. I don't want to be unfair to the man. I mean, if someone's trying to come back into the good graces of where the party is, for God's sakes, we ought to
acknowledge
it. Exactly. But the feeling I got as I read it, it was quite heavily guarded and seemed quite, please don't think ill of me, even though I suck.
Yeah. Well, that's his modus operandi.
He did write an article. Yeah, he did write an article, an editorial. Yeah, here it is. We must stand with Cruz. And he wrote it in Red State, which I thought. And this was on the 24th. It's very short, so perhaps if I can take just a few seconds of your time, I can read it. So this is in Red State. Chairman Reince Priebus apparently has a diary. Dear diary, I still suck. Why don't people love me? I named myself.
Dear diary.
Did you say he wrote it
as the little prince
in Red State or Red Ball Gag? What did you say?
Yes, he writes for both, but apparently he has some running thing in his diary. This was September 24th, 2013, and this was written at 4:41 p.m. Ted Chairman Reince Priebus muses in a battle between Ted Cruz and Harry Reid. We must stand with Senator Cruz. Last week, House Republicans overwhelmingly passed legislation that defunds Obamacare while keeping the government open and running. Now it is time for the Senate to do the same. Republicans want to keep the government running. Democrats claim they want the same, but they aren't acting like it. By denouncing the House bill, Harry Reid has already said that he's willing to shut down the government to save face for the president and to defend a failed law. Luckily, Senator Cruz refuses to be bullied by Harry Reid and the Democrat-led Senate. 55% of Americans disapprove of the manner in which Obamacare is being implemented. 55% disagree in the way it's being implemented. Anyway, all I'm saying, just those are interesting words. I'm sure they were chosen for a reason. Yet Harry Reid and Senate Democrats continue to defend it, even at the expense of keeping the government running. Republicans run the House, and they've done their part, funding the government, defunding Obamacare. Senator Cruz is continuing the fight in the Senate. If the Senate fails to defund Obamacare, it will be Democrats' fault. If the government has to shut down, it will be their doing. I stand with Republicans, and we are all standing against this train wreck of the law. So, anyway, he said that he supports Ted Cruz, and he supports defunding
Obamacare, it's going to be the Democrats' fault. So basically it's kind of a CYA, you know, rear guard action. You know, you're never going to find Reince Priebus out there in the forefront fighting for things. You know, maybe realistically that's not the job of the leader of the Republican Party because it's
unless he's fighting for Romney.
Yeah, exactly. Unless he's fighting for Romney, in which case anything that gets in his way is going to mow it down, stab him in the back, left and right. But for this kind of thing, it's a rear guard action. Let's just make sure that at the end of the day, the Democrats get blamed for this. Because American people are unsatisfied with the way this law is being implemented. Not the existence of the law itself or the damage it's done to the economy or the destruction of the 40-hour work week and our chance at the American dream.
Well, I think rear guard means something different.
there is a good way to implement the destruction of the American dream, I think. And maybe Reince Priebus, in a conversation with Harry Reid, will be able to figure out what exactly that is. But in the meantime, the rest of us who want to attain the American dream probably are going to fight them tooth and nail.
Yeah. Well, Tex, thanks for sharing those wonderful words from Little Prince Pubic's diary. And I think that rear guard means something completely different for Little Prince Pubis. But there's only one response to that that little diary entry, right?
I pity the fool goes home crying to his mama.
Go home crying your mama, Pubic. You're not fit to be RNC chair. Mark Willis is a better man, and you know it. It's unbelievable. Look, gentlemen, believe it or not, we've only got about a half hour of show left.
Wow.
And, well, it's a big topic. And what everybody needs to realize is that the power is in your hands. You have champions. And as we talked about last week, Ted Cruz is leading. I mean, the dude is doing – he's only been there 9 months, right? The first time he was on the Senate floor was March 6th, and that was in support of Rand Paul's filibuster against, derailing your Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights and the drone thing. So he hasn't been there that long, and typically junior senators don't do much. But the fact is that this guy's leading. Not only is he leading the Senate, now granted McConnell got 25 of the, including himself, of the surrender caucus to cave to Reid, and then, you know, Flake and Hatch didn't vote. Well, I mean, can you really not vote? I mean, a senator is 50% of the vote for the state. So basically cut down the state's vote by half by not voting. So Arizona and Utah only got one vote instead of two. That's misrepresentation. They're not doing their jobs, but they were threading the needle. They want to say that they didn't vote for cloture because we told them not to vote for cloture. Well, but you didn't vote against it either. You know, don't let them get away with it. But he's leading conservatives on this issue. He's doing a better job as Speaker of the House, leader of the majority, and whip in the House than those three losers, Eric Cantnot, McCarthy, and the Boehner are doing. And he is leading in the media narrative. Now, here's the interesting thing. The media is full-on for Obama, okay? Full-on for Obama, and I would argue that
yeah.
to some extent...
Even after that AP scandal.
Yeah, you know, even though they're being spied on and all the other stuff, they're still full-on for it because they like this stuff, and so do the rhinos, the squishes, the surrender caucuses. Just because they don't like us saying those things, that's why I'm going to keep saying them. But believe it or not... there was an 18-minute interview on Meet the Press where they were trying to manage and put down Cruz, and he handles it masterfully. We'll try to get to all 18 minutes, but not all at once. We're going to do the first segment now. It's about 7.5 minutes, but listen carefully, and listen to the way Gregory puts the questions and the lies he keeps trying to reassert, okay? And listen to the way Ted doesn't do what typical politicians do when they don't want to answer a question, where they pivot away to a different issue. Ted takes it head-on. And challenges the premise of the question, which is designed to set it up for failure. It's masterful. It's very important to pay attention. If you didn't watch the interview, go to the Tex and Rex show page on Facebook, and the clip is there. I always put all of the relevant clips and articles, including the one that Tex just read from, in the comments under the picture that is promoting the show. And then if you join Tex and Rex's Liberty Militia on Facebook, everything that we use is there for you to reference and use to get the word out there. And the most important thing, and we talked about this last week, you have to do the work. You have to go to www.don'tfundit.com. You have to call the Senate. And the switchboard number is 202-224-3121. But more importantly, because if you're listening to the show, you're already active and involved, I mean, we're mildly entertaining, but that can't be the only reason you're listening. You're a grassroots of conservative activist or a libertarian. Remember, an authentic conservative is two-thirds of libertarians, so learn to get along. You've got to create a force multiplier. You've got to get other people to do it. Now, some people don't get involved politically. Some people don't know the House switchboard number. They don't know to call. They're afraid to call because they think they have to know what they're talking about. When they answer the phone, they don't care what you're going to say to them. They don't care what your opinion really is as to why you think the way you think. All they care about is, are you in favor of this or are you against it? All you really have to do is call up and say, defund Obamacare, delay Obamacare, don't authorize a continuing resolution without defunding, delay. That's it. Okay, and then hang up.
By the way, you're being reelected in 2014, maybe.
Yeah, remind them that they're up for reelection. You're going to remember how they voted. You know, all they do is tally the votes, and then just give it to the center. And say, hey, look, today we got 1,000 calls. 950 told you not to vote for the CR if it funds or doesn't delay Obamacare, and 50 said you're doing a great job. Yeah, that tells them where the wins are. So you got to make the calls. You got to get other people to do it. Those who are uninvolved feel the same way that you do. Most of the country feels the same way that you do, but they don't do anything about it. They don't know what to do about it. They've never even considered doing something about it. And the number one reason people don't do these things is because no one asked them to do them. So what Ted Cruz is doing is he's leading, but he's not looking for you to follow him. You don't have to like his personality. You don't have to like him. But on this issue of restoring conservatism, restoring the Constitution, and making the Republican Party actually behave the way that its platform says that it does, he's leading. But he doesn't want you to follow him. He wants you to become a leader. A good leader doesn't make followers. A good leader makes leaders. So be a leader and get this job done. Here's Ted Cruz on Meet the Press.
The Republican senator from Texas, Ted Cruz, you're the man in the middle of this whole fight. So here are the stakes. Defund or delay, say you and other Republicans. The president says, no way. This law is moving forward. Are you in control of what happens next?
Look, at the end of the day, every senator has to decide how he or she is going to vote. Every representative has decided how he or she is going to vote. The House last night at 12:30 in the morning voted to keep the government open, to fully fund the government. But at the same time, the House responded to the millions of Americans who are hurting under Obamacare. And I think the Senate needs to do the same thing.
You keep saying that the Senate and the House should listen to the American people. I looked at polling this week that shows in a lot of quarters the bill is unpopular, the law is unpopular. 56% want to uphold this law. So when you say listen to the American people, they're not necessarily with you.
Well, look at the phrasing of that. Uphold this law, I promise you, if you do any poll on do you want to uphold this law, the answer is always yes.
So it's just polling methodology?
Look, there are a lot of polls that are done for advocacy purposes. I promise you, any single senator who goes home to his or her state, any representative that goes home to his or her state, and you hold a town hall, and you just ask people, what are you facing? I mean, I've spent hundreds of hours crisscrossing the state of Texas, traveling nationally, and people all over the country, they're losing their jobs, they're being forced into part-time work, they're facing skyrocketing health insurance premiums, and they're losing their health insurance.
We'll get into some of the particulars of Obamacare, because obviously there's more to that story that advocates would argue, but let's just stick with the here and now. So how does this end? Because as I understand it, you would only support defunding of Obamacare. A delay for you is not enough.
Well, let's talk about the next steps. The next step is the Senate needs to act. And right now, the Senate's on recess. In my view, Harry Reid should call the Senate back in today. We have a bill in front of us. There's a government shutdown in 48 hours. Listen, I would love to be back in Houston with my two little girls playing with them this afternoon. As you know, I'm here in Washington, D.C., because I want to be here and ready to work. And there's no reason the Senate should be home on vacation at a time.
But you know, the Senate has acted, the majority leader will say, passed a bill to keep the government open, and now we've gone back to trying to delay or defund Obamacare. So the Senate is saying, we're not going to take this up. Should they take up part of it? Should there be votes? Would you filibuster this bill?
Well, let's be clear what the Senate has done. So far, Majority Leader Harry Reid has essentially told the House of Representatives and the American people, go jump in a lake. He said, I'm not willing to compromise. I'm not willing to even talk. His position is 100% of Obamacare must be funded in all instances, and other than that, he's going to shut the government down. Now, David, I hope he doesn't do that. If Harry Reid forces a government shutdown, that will be a mistake. I hope he backs away from that ledge that he's pushing us towards. But that is his position.
But Senator, even Republicans that I've spoken to, your colleagues, say Senator Cruz can't blame Harry Reid for shutting down the government. Senator Reid acted. He passed a bill to keep the government open.
But let's be clear. The House has twice now voted to keep the government open. And if we have a shutdown, it will only be because when the Senate comes back, Harry Reid says, I refuse even to talk. And let's be clear also. President Obama has granted a delay for giant corporations. Every big company in America has gotten a one-year delay. If Harry Reid shuts the government down, what he will be saying is American families don't get treated as well as we treat giant corporations. Giant corporations don't have to suffer, get a delay on the harms from Obamacare, but hardworking American families, he's going to insist that they suffer now.
It's interesting. Democrats say, you know, the problem with Senator Cruz's position is that it's a purist position. There are problems with Obamacare. The White House admits that. We talked about polling in some quarters indicating great dissatisfaction with the law, as you're talking about in town hall meetings. But you haven't engaged in a debate about how to change the law. What you've gone out and said is, let's kill the law altogether. Let's defund it.
Actually, with respect, David, I think the premise of your question is wrong. It is the Democrats who have taken the absolutist position. I've engaged. I'd like to repeal every word of the law. But that wasn't my position even in this fight. My position in this fight was we should defund it, which is different from repeal. And even now what the House of Representatives has done is a step removed from defunding. It's delaying it. Now, that's the essence of a compromise. For all of us who want to see it repealed, simply delaying it for American families on the same terms as is being done for big corporations, that's a compromise. And at the same time, David, on the other side, what have the Democrats compromised on? Nothing. Zero. Their position is absolutely no, no matter what. How is that compromise?
You make this argument as if there's no broader context here. Obamacare has been legislated. It has been adjudicated, and it has been tested to the political system. And so let's go through that. We had an election where I heard the standard bearer of the Republican Party, Mitt Romney, say Obamacare should be repealed. All the Republicans already voted against this thing when it was ultimately passed. The Supreme Court upheld it. And then this summer, you and your colleagues said, look, let's have a strategy here of defunding Obamacare. And you had people who signed a letter, and they said they joined you in that fight. Well, here you are now. You don't even have the same number of folks who signed the letter who voted with you in this effort. There are not protests in the streets arguing to do away with this law in the way that you'd like. Again, 56% in one poll this week, New York Times, CBS, said let's uphold the law. So I'm focusing on results, your goal and results. Where have you moved anything?
Okay, look, the facts are becoming more and more clear that Obamacare isn't working. Every day that's becoming more clear. There's a reason the unions are jumping ship. One union after another is saying, let me out. There's a reason why James Hoffa, the president of the Teamsters, said that he was writing on behalf of millions of working men and women, and he used millions, not hundreds, not thousands, and he said Obamacare was destroying their health care. Destroying is his word. Now, why is it that Harry Reid and the Senate Democrats are not willing to listen to the millions of working men and women?
Wait a second. There are also benefit administrators in my research who indicate that there is no real sign that employers would stop giving health insurance to their employees. It's a major recruitment tool for how to get employees. And aspects of the law have been delayed so that it can work better. And perhaps these problems that you're identifying could be rectified short of complete defunding. I want to go back to where we started for a moment just to get you clear on this point. A government shutdown under these circumstances, because this doesn't sound like it'll be resolved, that's an acceptable outcome to you?
Look, I don't want a government shutdown. I don't think Harry Reid should shut down the government. Let me make one point. The House of Representatives did something else terrific last night, which is they passed a bill to make clear that regardless of what happens, the men and women of our military should be paid. And Harry Reid, I believe, should bring that up. That passed unanimously in the House. And listen, right now, Harry Reid and President Obama have been essentially holding the military hostage, threatening their paychecks over this potential shutdown they might force. I think regardless of what happens,
but is it an
we
acceptable
should pass
income?
The bill. No, of course it's not acceptable. We shouldn't have a shutdown, which means Harry Reid has to move off his absolutist position. His position, I mean, you've seen multiple compromises from the Republicans, and you've seen zero. I mean, can you tell me any movement the Democrats have had whatsoever?
But how does he move?
That's all I got to say. Are you there?
Why is Harry Reid shut down the government? There you go, Tex.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's all a BS argument. Who's shutting down what, right? Okay? You know, this isn't something that's done by a single party. This is done by the agreement of all parties within government as to whether or not you fund it and at what level you fund it and what you fund and what you do not fund. And that is part of a conversation between legislators, right? And so presumably the other side knows the consequences of not agreeing with this, and they understand the consequences of this law and what it's doing to the economy, but instead they're more interested in what is good for our party and can we blame it on the other party. And therefore, do I think I can make political hay at the ballot box out of this, meaning will it be good for me? Of all the 300-plus million people in the United States, will this benefit me in some way or another? That really is the question that they're asking. So at the end of the day, if the government gets shut down over the implementation of a shitty law that is choking off the economy and robbing Americans of a chance at the American dream, is the important thing whether or not it's good for you or your party or who gets blamed for it? No. If you had people who actually gave a shit about this country and who are legislating in the interest of what will benefit the United States and the citizens who have put them there in their offices, then they would go look at this and they probably would have read the damn bill before they passed it. And they would say, this is a deadly law. This thing is killing everything. And our own constituents, the labor unions, are turning against us on this. So the problem here is not the Republican Party, nor is it people like Ted Cruz who are trying to stop implementation of this law by defunding it because it's like cancer, it's black plague for the future of this country. It's not them who are the problem. It's the problem of the people who are the politicos who are like, how is this good for me? Oh, this is awesome for me. Will I continue to get money that I don't deserve? Will people continue to write positive things about me in the press that I totally don't deserve? If the answer is yes, then I'm totally for it. And fuck the little people and the serfs. They're all stupid morons anyway, and the press will tell them what to do. Or, as Charles Foster Kane famously said, and Citizen Kane, when his wife said, but the people will think what I tell them to think. That's what they think is going to happen. And so somehow the press is lauding these people, and the people, being the stupid servant minions that many of them are cheering them on and saying, yes, this person is sticking up for me by sticking it up my bum and screwing me and my chance at a future and my children and their chance to have a good future. This person's standing up for me, but please don't shut the government down, this vast organ that is doing nothing but destroying the American economy and then screwing us for nothing less than, 100-plus years. They're doing the interest of the American people. And so there you have the narrative, and now you have to go out and talk to people and tell them that, hey, I think the government's fucking us over. And you know what the interesting thing is? Most of them will say, yeah, you know what? I think the government's fucking us over. And then you say, yeah, I think this is how they're doing it. And you know what? They don't disagree. They're like, yeah, I think that's true. So the party doesn't matter, That's the thing. But, the whole narrative that the government shutdown is going to be the end of the world, I mean – Obama's out there, oh, yeah, if they shut down the government, then, old people aren't going to get their paychecks. Oh, let's scare the old people, right? Oh, and then we're not going to pay the military. Let me tell you a couple things, right? A little bit about history, what I know. I only know a few years of history. It only goes back to, 5, 6,000 BC. I did an ancient history degree, whatever. But let me tell you something. I've seen some recurring things happen in history. If you don't pay the military, they kind of come and cut your head off. That's kind of a given. That kind of always happens. That's like what bedrock thing. So if you ever find yourself, you're like ruler of a country or whatever, and you have a military under you, your number one priority, regardless, now I know you're going to want to go for that harem package because that's a good package. Those are very popular, by the way. I'll tell you in history, a lot of male leaders in particular, they try to go for the multiple wife thing. Very good. But only possible as long as you pay those henchmen. The minute you stop paying them, yeah, you have, all of a sudden, you have head separation syndrome. So the military will be paid in any kind of government shutdown situation. Old people's pension will be paid because the purpose, let's get back to why socialism exists, because the purpose of all of this stuff initially was we are facing revolts in Europe from the people, where the people are demanding stuff from government. And the kings running things back then were like, how do we pay the people off to get them to shut the hell up? And they said, we'll come up with old age insurance. Most of them probably won't even make it to that. But they'll think they have it, and they won't want to kill you.
And McCain was like, you know, that sounds pretty good. Let's do that. And now I got to get back to my harem. By the way, has my army been paid? Yes, that's awesome. Now I can go enjoy my harem, right? I mean, this is how things basically work, and they've worked this way for tens of thousands of years. And I don't know, people, oh, yeah, but we're more enlightened now than we were 200. No, you're not. You're just not. I'm sorry. This is how planet Earth basically functions, right? So all these social security systems and everything, they're always going to be funded because it's a way to stave off revolts and revolutions and that sort of thing. So they'll get paid. The army's going to get paid. The army will get paid more sooner than anybody else gets paid, let me tell you that, unless you have a total idiot in charge, right? But so you pay them. And then
we do.
Yeah, exactly. You pay the army or the military, you know, you got several branches now, but you pay the military, and then you go pay, like, the old people and all the other people that you told them were going to be paid, and basically now you've provided for domestic peace, and then you go argue about parts and services or how much are my contractors going to get paid for building these really good roads that have taken, like, 20 years to build, even though it's only a mile long or whatever, you know? You argue about that stuff later, but you make sure you don't get your head separated from the body, right? And the problem is, at this point, we've kind of gotten so far away from that that government's become so expensive that people are sort of losing sight of the basic functions of government. You can have corruption in government because, let's be honest, most governments do have corruption in them. You can have corruption in government, but you have to make sure the basic functions are being taken care of and the corruption is kept at a very low level. And you want to stamp it out wherever you can find it, because once you have corruption in government, it's very, very difficult to ever get out. So there you go. That's, I don't know. That was my thought
that was
on
a
that
good
topic.
That was a good diet.
No, I mean, yeah, they were smart. They funded the military with a separate clean CR. So basically, the only reason that the military won't get paid is if Harry Reid chooses not only to kill this CR because the Republicans are going to cave, but also because he will actually not even pass a CR without funding Obamacare that pays for your fine young men and women who are serving in your military forces. So I think that was a smart move on the Republicans' part, and it actually honors, you know, those who serve. Tex, did you want to close out, and then we'll go to Chris?
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that, you know, the government shutdown is not going to be the end of the world, because the only things that are going to be shut down are non-essential functions. But what they tend to shut down are the things that the public sees.
Yeah.
Which should raise two red flags, not necessarily red herrings, but red flags in your mind, one of which is, oh, they're trying to make me feel the pain so that they won't feel the pain, right? That should be the first thing that is an irritant to you. Having worked for the government myself, I can tell you that where I worked, we did this often, right? So they're going to push the pain onto you and not onto them. So you're going to feel discomfort, and the government won't feel discomfort. And then the second thing you should consider is that what is all this other stuff that is being funded for which you apparently receive no benefit, right? If the things you benefit from are the things that irritate you when they get shut down, what is going on that has to be funded no matter what that you don't know about? Have you ever considered that? So I'll leave you with that, but let me tell you, if the government gets shut down, it's not going to be the end of the world. It might be a minor inconvenience if you plan to camp at a national park or something like that, but there are plenty of nice state parks nearby that you could camp at just as easily. And, you know, if you really like that national park land in your state, maybe you should talk to your state about, you know, hey, can we buy this land and make it state land, and then we don't have to talk to the federal government, the dysfunctional federal government that can't seem to agree on how to fund things. Just my thought.
You done?
So I'll turn it over to you, Chris. I don't know. I guess
I
got the mic.
I didn't want to jump on over the top of you. You know, another thing that is not being discussed in this not here tonight, but in the whole, you know, what I'm seeing out on the mainstream, is the fact that we're not talking about the budget. We're not talking about how much government is costing us in the last 4 years per year. Where we're at now, we're not talking about
you know, raising that, you know, the impact of raising the debt ceiling again. I mean, there's so much of a larger part of this conversation that isn't even coming to battle because, as usual, the libs started, or the leftists and the media started with their verbal attack. You know, Republicans are going to shut down the government. You know, they had their message on point weeks ago, you know, setting it up so that they could just run and every one of their drones, you know, the people that are elected, can just repeat the same crap. And the Republicans, you know, are busy as usual, you know, reacting to that. And it's interesting in this thing that Rex played. Through the first part of it, you know, Cruz was on a constant barrage from Gregory in that interview. But after Cruz, you know, continued to work it in the second half of that interview, Gregory actually shut up and let Cruz talk. And I found that very telling. And if more Republicans knew what they believed in, spoke it, didn't counsel with their consultants, but actually, you know, listened to their constituents and got their dialogue down, and they were in an educational mode, we wouldn't be in this reaction mode all the time. That if there's anything that frustrates me with my background in business and life and things I've done, is anytime you go into the public to debate or to do a town hall or to have a any kind of a meeting or a one-on-one meeting, is you master the dialogue, number one, and number two, you master the objections. In other words, here are the top three or four things that are going to come at me. And what I do is I I've done thousands and thousands of meetings with people, and I would always take the greatest negatives, and I would bring them to the front of my meeting. And I would say, and Obama plays this trick, some say, or, you know, this is what I hear a lot, and this is a situation that, you know, people think they understand, and let me tell you the truth. I would always do that before I did my presentation. In other words, you know, break the negatives down and take control of the environment. Get rid of the bullcrap so that then you can do a clean presentation. I don't know why, and this is fun, and you know this, Rex, from what you do, but this is a fundamental, basic communication skill. And honestly, outside of a few of them, Republicans suck at it. The left will build up this attack and just spread it through the media, and then the Republicans will try to take a stand on something, and then they spend all their time dodging bullets. And that is not how you win a damn war. And I don't know who, you know, they pay all this damn money to these consultants. They don't teach them shit about communicating to the American people. Sorry, Tex. Go ahead.
Well, Chris, yeah, I mean, what you're saying is true, where the Democrats had agreed set of talking points that they were going to use throughout the entirety of the battle,
mm-hmm.
right?
And over and over again.
Yeah, the Republicans also had the same thing. The Democrats were going to say that, hey, we're fighting to implement Obamacare and to fund the federal government. We're fighting to fund the federal government to live up to our obligations because the United States has always paid its bills. You would be irresponsible to not pay its bills, right? And we're going to fund the government. We're going to fund Obamacare because elections have consequences, and therefore we are going to fund this piece of shit law that's going to destroy the country and our economy as we know it and destroy the American dream. But we're living up to our obligations, right? And the Republicans, they had a narrative that was adopted very early on by the leadership, which is we are going to fund the budget of the federal government, no matter how fucking big it is, and we're going to fund Obamacare as well because elections have consequences, and even though we won in the House, that election has
scared.
No consequence, and we're going to continue to do whatever the Democrats tell us to do as long as we continue to not get criticized in the Washington Post, which nobody reads. Right, and then Cruz and other people that came along were like, hey, I don't know, I think that's kind of BS, and I think maybe we shouldn't do this. And so they had to adopt a new narrative, which is, oh, I don't know who that guy is, but he's not part of us. He's some sort of extremist. He's outside the mainstream, and they're not part of us, and they're radicals, and they're nut jobs, and we don't know how they got into our party or who voted for them. Yeah, anarchists and the like, and we don't want them around. And then, shit, they just wrestled control of the entire political apparatus from us. And that's why they didn't have a set narrative, because their narrative was always going to be surrender. And then somebody came along and said, hey, maybe we don't need to surrender this thing. Maybe we can actually stand up and we can do something about it, right? And, you know, maybe in this particular fight, maybe we can't win. But in fighting the battle, being from Texas, which Ted Cruz is, in Texas we fought a battle known as the Battle of the Alamo. And you know what? We lost the damn thing. And we rallied around that, and we won the damn war. So maybe you don't lose this damn battle, but you win the war because you rally people around the cause. And that's the important thing, and that's what the Republican Party leadership, A, doesn't want to do. That's the most important thing. It's not that they don't believe it's possible, right? It's that they don't want to. And they want to make sure that that doesn't happen because they have no interest in victory. They're invested in failure. It makes their life easier to just be a Democrat in Washington. It is so much easier. Because how many rednecks walk around Washington? Not that many. Rednecks are stupid and terrible, and they're horrible in every way, and apparently they want rights, and they don't want Washington to tell them what to do. But I'm from Washington, and my job is to tell people what to do and how much money they need to send me. So we don't need more people like that. That's the problem with the Republican leadership, is that they are a captured interest. They're not really the leadership of the Republican voter. They're the party of government.
Reminds me of the same battle that Newt had, and I think I said this on the other show, but, you know, we may have more audience. But when Newt, you know, walked into the House as a freshman, and a couple years later, he said, hey, we can take over a majority. People looked at him like he was crazy because they had settled into a second-tier party since 1928. And Newt worked and built that revolution of new leadership from the grassroots up across the nation. And they built that up for that win.
It's taken them 20 years to destroy that and to get all the leaders out of the party and to get a whole bunch of untermensch yes men instilled back into the leadership positions of the Republican Party so that it can go back to being the permanent minority and the token resistance to the Democrat leadership and to the socialist direction. Yeah, exactly. The Republican Party is a captured interest. It has been for most of its history. Barry Goldwater tried to change that. They shut Barry Goldwater down. And then Reagan came and changed that. And then Gingrich came, and they lost control of the freaking party. They finally got Gingrich under control. It was John Boehner, among others, that ousted Gingrich. And they have slowly ramped everything down and gone back to being the permanent minority party that they want to be. Because you know why? It pays really well, and you don't have to do very much. It's good work if you can get it.
It's the Rove model, and that's precisely what he did with the Romney campaign. He lost the campaign. They didn't even work that hard. He made $150 million, and he's still lying to you on Fox News. And the problem is that so many conservative voters are buying this bullshit, and they don't know what's going on. So if you're listening to this show, you're involved, you're awake, you're aware, maybe you came for the Liberty Movement, maybe you're Tea Party, Gingrich supporter, what have you, you've got to wake the others up, otherwise you're going to end up giving you Bush Rubio in 2016 and losing in 2014. And it's a grassroots tsunami that you have to send in, because the fact is you do have real leadership in the Republican Party. And I'm not talking about Boehner, Cantnot, McCarthy, McConnell, and all the other douchebags. I'm talking about Cruz, Paul, Lee, Gowdy, Amash, Gohmert, Issa. There are real leaders, but they're not going to ascend to the positions of leadership until you get rid of Little Prince Pubic, Karl Rove, that useless ham, and all these other losers. And the only way that happens is massive numbers. You have to make them fear angering you more than angering their backers and financiers. Believe it or not, we're down to the last 5 minutes of live air. If you're listening in your browser now, we're going to spill in overtime because we got the rest of the crews on Meet the Press to play for you. You have to call in. You can listen to your phone, 646-649-1013. Or, as always, all of our shows are available in archives on Blog Talk Radio homepage. So just go to Blog Talk Radio, search out the Tex and Rex show, and scroll down, and every show is there. You can listen to this one as soon as we're done, which will be in the next 45 minutes.
So the important message here is that the Republican Party is dead, because it is exactly what Tex just said. They want to be the permanent minority, to go along and get along, to go to the cocktail parties, hang out at the old Ebbett Grill, you know, hang out with the whores on 14th Street, and there's really not much difference between a whore and a politician anyway. That's their game. That's their gig, and the only way that you oust them is you send in tactical support and a grassroots tsunami to support the conservative A-team, which right now, since this thing is in the Senate, we're focusing on the Senate. That is Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, Rand Paul, and some of the old bulls are backing them, like Jeff Sessions, who's been a stand-up guy in this entire battle, not people like Bob friggin' Corker. And by the way, Tennessee, if you send Corker back to D.C., and if Arizona sends McCain back, or you know, Carolina, you send Graham back, we're going to have some serious problems. You got to get rid of these guys. They've got to be gone. And Bob Corker's phone number is 202-224-3344. If you go to the Tex and Rex show page on Facebook, there's a picture of Bob Corker. If you click on that picture, there is a 79-minute show. It was actually a two-and-a-half-hour show. I cut it down to 79 minutes. It has the entire colloquy between Mike Lee, Ted Cruz, and Rand Paul that reveals the game that the Rhino Swish Surrender Caucus plays against the conservative A-team. It's a very important thing to listen, and if you go into the comment section, the video is there for you to view. If you join Tex and Rex's Liberty Militia, the video is in there as well. It is very, very important, and we broke it down as to what was going on, so if you're confused about some of the terminology, colloquy, and how these things work with Senate procedures, we broke it down for you, explained to you exactly what Bob Corker, assisting Harry Reid, was trying to do to Mike Lee and Ted Cruz. It's very, very important, so I suggest you check it out. And with that, I'm going to play a clip that's going to take us over time. So this is the second clip from today's Meet the Press with Ted Cruz, and it's about 5.5 minutes, and we've only got 3.5 minutes live. So if you want to keep listening to the clip and listen to our commentary afterwards, we're going to go about 45 minutes. You've got to call in 646-649-1013. Here's Ted Cruz again.
Of course, I think regardless of what happens, we should pass the bill. No, of course it's not acceptable. We shouldn't have a shutdown, which means Harry Reid has to move off his absolutist position. His position, I mean, you've seen multiple compromises from the Republicans, and you've seen zero. I mean, can you tell me any movement the Democrats have had whatsoever?
But how does he move? What makes him move? What have you done to make him move, other than disrupt, your critics would say? Because as I outlined before, you've lost ground from even this summer on the position of getting people to vote with you. You lost ground from that position, and you haven't persuaded one Democrat. You got to have Democrats if you're going to overturn this thing.
Well, actually, just this week, Joe Manchin came out, Democrat from West Virginia, and said he supported a delay in the individual mandate. And listen, last time this was in the Senate, it was unfortunate. We had division among Senate Republicans. I had hoped Senate Republicans would be united. That didn't happen. But I'll tell you this, I'm optimistic. This next time around, this is an opportunity for Senate Republicans to come home.
You've campaigned on this.
I believe.
You've raised money on this. You've taken to the floor for 21 hours. You haven't moved anything legislatively. Do you concede that point?
I don't remotely. And, David, I recognize that the Washington establishment hasn't been convinced by the arguments, because the Washington establishment has been exempted from some of the harms. Members of Congress, how can you possibly justify to the American people that members of Congress are exempted from the law, aren't put on the exchanges like millions of Americans?
Well, they're part of the exchanges. They just get an employer contribution like
a lot of other people. Americans don't. Millions of Americans
don't. But 150 million Americans who get it from their employers do, don't they?
But anyone on the exchanges doesn't get the employer mandate, except for members of Congress. And President Obama did that. I mean, look, people are frustrated with Washington, and the simplest reason is, you've got politicians in both parties who aren't listening to the people and who are living by a different set of rules. The ruling class gets exempted. So Harry Reid and the Senate Democrats came to President Obama and said, we want out. We don't want under Obamacare. You know, I had an exchange with Dick Durbin on the floor of the Senate where he described the Senate's health care as first-class tickets, and he was arguing we should stick the American people in coach. Now, look, I think his own analogy shows what's wrong with this system. At a minimum, members of Congress shouldn't be treated better than the American people, and neither should big business. And if Harry Reid showed any modicum of being willing to compromise, he would agree to what the House has done to delay this all and say, this isn't ready for prime time, it's not working, and we're going to treat the American people at least as well as we treat
your
business.
You're talking a lot about Democrats. They're critical of you, but it's hard for them to get a word in edgewise because it's members of your own party who are so critical of what you've done and how you've done it. You have colleagues who have accused you of putting on a show. That was Senator Corker. Congressman Peter King said you're a fraud, that you're lying to the base, over-promising something that's possible. George Will, who's been a conservative columnist for the Washington Post and others, has been very supportive of you in the past. But he wrote this this week, and I want to have you respond to it, because it seems to crystallize some of the opposition. Those people who are best at deceiving others first deceive themselves, he wrote. They often do so by allowing their wishes to be fathers of their thoughts and begin by wishing that everything has changed. Republicans now making a moral melodrama over any vote that allows the ACA to be funded should remember Everett Dirksen of Illinois. The leader of Senate Republicans during passage of the 1964 Civil Rights Act, he recalled, 40 preachers caught me one afternoon there in that lobby. I am not a moralist, I told them. I'm a legislator. It is good to be both. It is sterile to be the former to the exclusion of the latter. Are you more moralist than legislator?
Look, I'm just trying to fight for 26 million Texans and for the American people. And I'm pretty sure George Will, in that column, argued that what we should be doing is delaying Obamacare, which is exactly what the House of Representatives just voted to do. And one important thing to emphasize, I mean, you keep, and all of the voices of Washington keep saying, we need compromise. Twice now, Republicans in the House have compromised. And twice, Harry Reid has said, we won't even have a conversation. I refuse to compromise. We want to fund it all. We want to stick it on the American people, and we won't budge. That's not a reasonable position. And if we have a shutdown, it will be because Harry Reid holds that absolute Lutus position and essentially holds the American people hostage.
You're making an argument. I asked you a specific question based on the facts on the ground. You've made all these arguments. My goodness, you went and spoke for 21 hours to make these arguments. You haven't moved anyone.
Oh, look, the American people overwhelmingly reject Obamacare. They understand it's not working. The only people who aren't listening to the argument are the career politicians in Washington. It's Harry Reid, who wants to use brute political force. And the great thing about the Constitution is that it creates a system of checks and balances, and each branch has the ability to check another. President Obama, sadly, in implementing Obamacare, has over and over again disregarded the law. When he granted an exemption for giant corporations, that was contrary to law. When he granted an exemption to members of Congress, that was contrary to law. Right now we have a system where the rich and powerful, those with connections to the Obama administration, they get spared some of the burdens of Obamacare. But those who are struggling, single moms and young people and people who are just trying to make it, they don't get the
You're an opponent of the law. There is, of course.
Look at that. Gregory just keeps setting up these traps that squishes like McConnell fall into, even when they're set up by guys like Huckster, who are allegedly his friend on Fox News. But Ted avoids all those landmines because he's speaking the truth. He's speaking conservatism, and he's speaking to you. And here's the thing. Chris, I'll let you go in a second, but
that's all right.
They were talking about, you know, that this is law. It's been adjudicated. It's been legislated, and the Supreme Court found it to be constitutional. So why are you trying to defund it? Well, DOMA was law. Obama told Holder not to enforce it. This thing is allegedly law, and Obama's already defunded and delayed most of it. So, you know, give me a break. That is the stupidest argument the Democrats are putting forward. I mean, you know, the fugitive slave law was law once. Are we going to start hunting down people and returning them to their master? I mean, look, just because something is a law doesn't mean you have to enforce it. That's why we have elections, so that if some Congress passes a stupid law and some president signs it into law, a future Congress and a future president can undo the mess. You know, we put prohibition as an amendment to the Constitution, and the states reversed it. So, you know, the law is not written in stone. Now, the law is not a living, breathing thing either. Whatever is law, okay? But we can change it. There is a process by which to do that. And the simple fact is that's what is going on here, and that's what they don't like. And the problem, again, is not Obama or Reid. It's McConnell and the Surrender Caucus, because they're the ones that could put a stop to this, but they're the ones that keep feeding into the beast. Go ahead.
A couple key things. One is his argument is felonious. All right. First of all, Harry Reid has blocked every Republican bill that has come over from the House. So so he just flat out blocks him. He doesn't even bring him to the floor. So when Gregory says something that, look, you haven't moved anything forward, and you didn't win, so you need to give up. You know, that's that whole argument. You know, like, oh, it's the first quarter and they're 20 points ahead. Why play the next three quarters? That's the argument they're making. But they discount the fact that Reed, you know, hundreds of bills, whether it was budget or Obamacare or whatever, have come over from the House, and then Reed just throws them in his damn drawer and he won't bring them to the floor. So right there, that's a lie, okay? And if they brought them to the floor, the American people would see a different vote, because if they would have brought anything that Reed risks losing on, he doesn't even bring to the floor. So we don't even have the democratic process going on in the Senate. One. The second point, if you look at the numbers of Republicans that have voted, even on the last vote, even though those idiots, those 27 idiots or 25 plus two idiots voted for Cloutier, if you look at the numbers of people in the House and the numbers of people in the Senate who voted to not fund Obamacare, the actual count number, it is the majority. So for Democrats to make this argument about, you know, you haven't moved anything forward, the majority of people have voted to defund Obamacare in the CR. And so, but you don't hear that because they lost in the Senate because of a handful of traitors. So it was rules and procedures that gave them that success that people like Gregory are arguing with. So it's just bullcrap all the way around. Now, the problem is most Republicans are so used to surrendering, and I love that term Levin uses, French Republicans, that they don't know how to argue. Now, they got their hands. He's got the bull by the horns in this conversation with Cruz. And in the last part of this clip, Gregory gets quiet because he's losing the frickin' argument. He thinks he's smart. Yeah, in some ways he is pretty quick, you know, quicker than some of the other doofuses out there. But the bottom line is that, you know, he hit him with everything he got, and Cruz maintained his position, answered every question, turned it around. He's a master debater. You know, he knows what he believes in. He's got his information. He's in the fight, and he's not going
to
surrender.
Just to clarify, you said master debater.
Debater.
Just to clarify.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, I think that what the American people are seeing, what they voted for in action, because that's what it's about. This is not, you know, this may be some kind of a game to the media and the pundits in Washington and Obama and his group, whoever his group is at this point in time. This may be a game to them. We're talking about a $1 trillion tax increase with Obamacare over the next 10 years and probably more, because they don't even have a clue. We're talking about a bill that is already 2.5 times more expensive to implement than they first thought it would be. We're talking about the fact that people's premiums are going up. My wife did some analysis today, I do believe, and she read it to me tonight. You know, on me as, you know, I'm an independent business person, so all the issues like what we are facing in exchanges, what kind of plans we had, what kind of costs we were dealing with, deductibles, you know, all this stuff. And I looked at that stuff going, there ain't no benefit to me. Obamacare is going to cost me a bloody ass fortune. And that's just me personally. And she did the research on it. So, you know, that's just one person. We're seeing, you know, Gregory saying you need to surrender because you haven't gained anything. Well, the House just voted in a majority again, you know, another bill. So, what do you mean we haven't gained anything? Oh, the House doesn't matter because,
well,
the House is full of Republicans? Is that what the point is, Gregory? You know, it's this mindset. Oh,
the thing is, he's capturing the imagination of the voting public, right? Oh,
yes.
But you haven't changed the legislative agenda, so let's move the goalposts. So
bingo.
You've captured the imagination of the voting public. So let me redefine for them and my pathetically small audience how you've actually failed. It's all about defeating the thing before it happens and driving people down and trying to prove to them that you can't change the system, that Washington is this huge machine that you don't know how to affect and that you just have to accept its whims
and learn to accommodate yourself to Washington, which is not how this government was designed. This is government by the people, and we know all the rest, right? And so the people are supposed to be telling Washington what to do, but what Washington wants to do now is to tell everybody how Washington is going to run things, and you have to accommodate to what Washington is going to do. Well, it doesn't actually work that way, and the people are realizing and coming to the understanding that they actually have the power under the Constitution to do these things. Now, there are systems in place that are going to prevent you from doing what you think you can do. Essentially, a delegate to a convention is able to vote for the person of his own conscience, which turns out is actually legal under the law and under the party rules, but at the last minute, turns out you can't actually do that because they're going to pull some shenanigans. Well, guess what? Those shenanigans are going to work at every level of this system because this system has been sabotaged throughout in order to keep the American people from doing what they actually want to do with government, because the whole thing is to increase the debt, to get us more into debt to a group of people who profit from that. And it's up to us to take things back. And so this is part of coming to an understanding. So here you have a fight over a major piece of legislation, and you have a fight over what you might consider to be a minor skirmish and an overall war against this piece of legislation, which maybe we will, maybe we won't be able to stop, right? I think you actually can. If you have the focused mind of the American people, you can stop anything. You can move a mountain if you actually want to, right? But this battle, yes, on this point, probably difficult to win, but the point is to draw the line in the sand and find out who stands where and to rally the base and get them behind the movement. There will be many more fights in the struggle, right? But the leadership, well, first the Democrats and the press, they want to say, oh, you're going to lose, you're going to lose, you're going to lose, so don't even try. Don't even try because you're going to lose. Don't even try because you're going to lose, because you're going to lose, you're going to lose, right? And so people like Cruz, they go try, and in the meantime, they rally the base, and they get a whole bunch of people activated about this, and they get them talking to their congresspeople and calling them and saying, what in the hell are you doing about this, Mitch McConnell, you worthless piece of shit, and John Boehner, I thought you were a Republican, turns out you're a piece of horse shit, and you're not actually in this party, you work for the Democrats, why don't you go ahead and run the Democrat Party, what are you and Nancy Pelosi, just kiss the gavel at night, you know, what are you guys doing, right? And so it's illuminating, right? So the point is not whether or not this particular battle is going to be won or lost, but what did you learn in the process? And what we learned is our party is a captured interest. Our leadership never had an interest in winning this battle because our party never had a plan to win any other subsequent battle. So if you say, oh, well, yeah, we knew this, we're so wise as the leadership, we knew this party, this battle was going to be lost from the get-go, right? And we had a different tactic. Don't hate us for our different tactic. What was your different tactic? The next tactic would be fighting over the debt ceiling limit. And you know what they're going to say? Oh, well, we can't fight over that because whatever, they have a million reasons why you can never fight over anything, and that's led us to where we are today because they're defeatists. They're on the other side. And so what you have to do is things like this that rally the party base, that get people involved, and where you can find who the real leaders are and the people you should listen to and the people that you need to give the middle finger to and find out who's running against them and give the person who's running against them all the money. And when Karl Rove goes on fucking Fox News and says, oh, you have to support John Boehner because of whatever, you don't listen to fucking Karl Rove and you don't listen to John Boehner or whatever the hell they're saying because they're bought and paid for by the moneyed interest, because the Republican Party is the token resistance. It is a captured interest. It is not meant to be a real alternative to the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party has run this country for many years. It is a one-party state, and it has been, and that's the way people like things. And if you get a bunch of people causing problems, causing waves, you got to get rid of them.
Anarchist.
And oh my God, this person's actually saying shit that the American people believe in. He's dangerous. Get rid of him.
Anarchists! Cats and dogs living together.
People don't realize how much resistance was against Ronald Reagan. I mean, it took him a lot of years to win. And Newt.
Ronald Reagan was hated by the party. And they hated him when he was in office.
and they worked against
who,
it. We talked about
who
this.
Who do
Bob
economics?
Dole. Yeah,
Ronald
like,
doesn't like
Ronald
Reagan.
Reagan raised taxes 9 bajillion freaking times, right? Well, who made him? Because who was heading the Senate Finance Committee at the time? It was Bob Dole, right? And Bob Dole was doing all this stuff and passing it and sending it over there. Bob Dole was on the other side. He was, as Newt Gingrich claimed him to be, he was, and Newt Gingrich in this instance was quoting William Kristol, father of now Bill Kristol, noted neocon, and party of government apparatchik. But Bob Dole was the tax collector for the welfare states.
Yep.
And that's what these people are. That's what John Boehner is, and that's what Mitch McConnell is, and all these people. They're not on your side. You're never going to win with them. And so the sooner you give up on them, the better off you're going to be. Get rid of them. Find who supports them and stop supporting those people who support them.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much the entire – look, the entire don't fund it petition, which is almost 2 million, go there, sign it, get other people to sign it, get that number up because it matters. It puts pressure on the, quote, leadership, okay? This is Ted Cruz and Mike Lee speaking directly to the people. Remember, most of the people in this country, more so now than ever, are moving towards conservatism and libertarianism. And remember, conservatism is two-thirds libertarianism. So these guys are speaking not only to who most of the people in this country are, but they're standing up for you as well. And what Tex just said is absolutely right. This party is not your friend, okay? But since it's a duopoly, to give you the false impression of choice, until you control the precincts and open them up and get other independents and libertarian and Constitution Party candidates in there, this is your choice. The Democrats represent the welfare warfare state accomplished, and the Republicans represent rhetorical resistance to the welfare warfare state. But the conservatives in the party that are being led by Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and Justin Amash and those others, that's the real heart of your future leadership, but they cannot do it against the odds that are facing them unless the people rise up to be stronger than the moneyed interests. They don't even have to have more money because sweat capital counts more if you rise up in massive numbers, and that's really what it takes. gentlemen, believe it or not, we're going to be cut off from Blog Talk Radio fairly soon. We've got the third part of the MPT clip to play. Chris referenced it already, where basically Ted Cruz shuts down Gregory. Unless you've got anything else to add, I'm going to go right into it.
No, I think that's good. It's getting late, and I say let's play the clip.
Bueller. Okay, here we go.
They don't get the
You're an opponent of the law. There is, of course, another side to this story, right? Millions of Americans are getting access to health care that they couldn't otherwise afford. Folks who have children, they can now be on it up to 26. Republicans agree with things like not having pre-existing conditions get in the way of getting insurance. Utilization is down. I spoke to a hospital administrator in Illinois this week, quite skeptical of the law, who said, look, utilization is down. That could ultimately be helpful for health care costs. You can't know what the effect is 5 years on from this law, and nor can proponents of the law. But here's one argument. You've made yours, and the president, when he spoke this week, he actually referred to your words, and I want to play a portion of this, suggesting that what you really don't want to happen is for the law to go forward, because then people would really start liking it. This is what he said.
He said, it's going to prove almost impossible to undo Obamacare. Right? So... In other words, we've got to shut this thing down before people find out that they like it.
You don't think Americans will like it? You don't think that 25% of the state of Texas that's uninsured will actually like the expanded access to get health insurance?
I don't, and here's why. Because it's not working. What's happening, if you want people to get health insurance, the best way for them to get health insurance is to get a job. And Obamacare is the biggest job killer in this country. If you look at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce surveyed small businesses subject to the mandate, half of them said that they were forcibly reducing people's hours to 29 hours a week or less or hiring part-time workers. Another 24% said they weren't growing to keep their size under 50 workers. If you're a young person coming out of school right now, unable to find a job, a big part of the reason you're not able to find a job is because small businesses aren't growing because of Obamacare. And there's nothing that could give you better health insurance than having a vibrant economy where you can get a job. Let's take, for example, the 15,000 workers at UPS who just a few weeks ago received notice from their employer that spousal coverage was being dropped, that their husbands and wives were losing the health insurance that they're enjoying right now. Let's take the workers at SeaWorld, who were told, we're forcibly reducing your hours to 28 hours a week because of Obamacare. This is happening all over the country, David. People are hurting because of this law.
Who's the legislator you most admire? Who's your big role model?
You know, I'll tell you, the senator I most admire was former Texas Senator Phil Graham. And it's actually a very good example, going back to, you know, there are voices who say this is impossible. And if you remember back in 1993, I know you do, when Hillary Care was being debated. And when Hillary Care was being debated, there were a lot of Republicans who came forward with what I called at the time Hillary Care Lite. We'll partially socialize health care. And it was because Republicans were convinced we can't stop this. And then Phil Graham strode out there, and he said, and I know you'll remember this, he said, this will pass over my cold, dead political body. And a whole lot of Republicans who were scared, they looked over, he wasn't killed, they ran behind him and they said, yeah, yeah, what he said. Look, the power of leadership can change debates. We saw that just a month ago with Syria. When President Obama said he was going to launch unilateral attacks on Syria, you had leaders of both houses of Congress support him, and then the American people spoke up at overwhelming numbers and said, we don't want to get involved in a sectarian civil war in Syria where there's no clear U.S. national security benefit to doing so. And what happened? The entire federal government turned. We didn't get involved. We didn't launch those attacks. And just weeks earlier, conventional wisdom in Washington said it's impossible.
Do you regret comparing the future of Obamacare to the rise of Hitler and Nazi Germany?
Well, the premise of your question isn't true. I didn't make that comparison. What I said is that there have been many voices in Washington who've said, we can't do this, we can't do this, we can't do this. And I went through the centuries where over and over again, when facing big challenges, Americans have risen to the occasion, whether it was the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, World War II, whether it was going to the moon under John F. Kennedy, or whether it was winning the Cold War. At every stage, there were voices of conventional wisdom who say, this can't be done. And at every stage, the American people rose to the occasion. And what I said is, we should do the same here. We should look to, if we empower the American people, if we get Washington to listen to the people, that's how we get this changed.
Do you ride this to the presidential nomination?
You know, it's easy for Washington to focus on politics. I understand. That's the business of this town. What I am trying to do every day is focus on making a difference in the lives of the American people. Every survey that's done in this country, the top priority of the American people is jobs and the economy. Under Harry Reid's Senate, we don't even talk about jobs in the economy. Obamacare is the biggest job killer in this country, and millions of Americans are hurting. You know, I'd like to see a Democrat respond to James Hoffa's letter that says this is right now destroying the health care of millions of Americans. That's not me. That's a Democrat union leader who has supported Harry Reid and President Obama. We need to be listening to the people because people are hurting because of Obamacare.
Senator, thank you for your views this morning. Thank you.
That was Ted Cruz on Meet the Press. Chris, you teed up how he kind of shut Gregory down, so go for it.
Well, I was just thinking, you just saw my chat. You need the sound of a cruise missile firing through the air and exploding, because you have that clip that when Tex says something good, nice shooting, Dex, you know. He nailed it. And the thing is the reason he nails it is he knows what he believes in. He knows what his fight is. He knows what his enemies are doing. And he is a master debater. Okay? And it really boils down to, what in the hell are these people doing in Congress, or even attempting to get election, if they don't know who they are, what they believe in, who their enemy is? It is mind-boggling to me, because out in the real world, whether you're in sales or finance or me as a contractor, if you don't know who you are, what you believe in, and what your opponents are going to do and how to overcome that in a positive way, which Cruz does very well, then you're going to starve to freaking death. I mean, to me, it's just amazing to me, as a business person. All my life, I've been in free enterprise, and all my life, you know, if I didn't sell or if I didn't get the job, I didn't pay the damn bills. It was just pretty fundamentally basic.
But it is amazing to me how these people get elected and stay elected and keep getting elected, and they can't even talk. You know, they can't even, you know, fight the good fight or debate. It should be, you know, they should take classes on this crap. I mean, you know, Cruz has got a background. He won, like, the national debate, right? He was, like, the national debate champion for his college. But he's also an attorney, which means the same thing. If you don't speak well, if you don't know who you are, what you believe in, and what your message is and what the enemy is playing, you lose the damn case. So I guess all these piss-poor attorneys become politicians. And then they settle in and start hanging out and following McConnell around the hallways and start following Boehner, you know, and like cancer. I mean, come on, give me a break. You ever heard these guys talk? I've never heard Boehner give a speech. I've heard him grunt a few words and walk away from the mic. I saw Cantor the first time. I've never really paid attention to him. I saw Cantor the first time actually on the Sunday shows last week. And I'm like going, are you kidding me? That's the next in line? You know, it's, and I don't mean to be so critical of this shit, but this is important stuff.
Well, you should be. No, I mean, look, they can give fine speeches, but the problem is they can't really do it under fire. They're like Obama. They got to read off the script because when they're pressed, since they don't believe anything they're saying, they can't do it. Ted never flinches. Mike Lee never flinches. Rand Paul never flinches. And it's because they believe what they're saying. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just want to make
21. No, that's fine. 21 hours without a teleprompter. I was impressed. I mean, and maybe it's because I've spoke a lot in my lifetime, you know, and done lots of presentations and training and things like that. I was impressed. And the thing is that if you don't know who you are and what you believe in, under pressure or under time, you're going to expose your weaknesses. And I got up the next day and I turned it back on because you'd been up all night watching it. And I got up the next day and booted up my computer and turned them on. And I'm like going, damn, he's still, remember I said, he's still crisp. He knows who he is, what he believes in, and what his fight is. He doesn't have any, because people keep trying to chip his armor. And it's the same thing they do to Rand Paul, because these are guys who have principles, and they believe in what they believe in. And the same thing with Amash and the rest of them. I don't want to, you know, discredit anybody else, but the two main players are Rand and Ted. But when they try to chip his armor. They try to throw those little barbs in there, those little modicums of doubt. You know, you know, Kai, you're not getting anywhere. What are you going to do? Are you going to shut down the government? Are you, you know, and they did all these little, you know, these fear-driven psychosis, man. It's just insanity. I've dealt with this shit all my life. And so, and he just comes back. He's clean. He's crisp. He's repetitive when he needs to be. And a master communicator, when somebody hits you with a tough question trying to trip you up, he slows down and he explains it very slowly. Then he builds back up. He doesn't react. You know, when it starts getting into an area where it's tricky, you know, where he can be tripped up if he's not careful or he can be misquoted, he slows down and he articulates very clearly. And I'm telling you something.
He's a litigator.
Reagan was like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I listened to that clip of Reagan talking about socialized medicine. And I know we had so many clips and we were going to go late anyway, but I'm just thinking, people need to listen to this stuff, because why is Reagan so celebrated from the right and hated by the left? Listen, go back and pull up some YouTube clips and listen to the man. He spoke directly to the people. He involved the people in the battle, and he asked the people to help. Very key.
Yep.
It's
good. It's just we're running out of time. And that's exactly what Ted Cruz is doing. And here's the thing. Mm-hmm. What's important to note here, we're talking a lot about Ted Cruz, about the defunct Republican Party, about, you know, the squishes, all that kind of stuff. Here's the thing.
Squishes.
You got to get this show out there. You got to get this information out there. You got to go to www.don'tfundit.com. You've got to call the senators, 202-224-3121, especially the senior senator from Kentucky, Majority Leader Mitchell McConnell. Hammer him especially, because basically he's the one who can lead the 27 squishes that surrender to Harry Reid, which is giving Obama everything that he wants. McConnell's phone number is 202-224-2541. And here's the thing. The Republicans have put forward conservative options because you demanded it, and your representatives who are actually conservative have demanded it. And so you push them to the right. So Boehner and Cantor, you know, little Cantnod, are now actually sounding conservative and getting conservative bills over to the House. It's the Senate squishes that are caving. And you've got to pressure them into doing it. Now, here's the thing. The Republicans have actually given you what you wanted, which is getting rid of Obamacare. Then they went for defunding it, which is not getting rid of it, but merely just taking the money out of it. And now they've gone to delaying it. Okay, so they've moved towards the position that Reid and Obama are trying to hold, which is full funding. That's how government works when you have a divided government and you have a bicameral Congress and an executive who can authorize or veto laws. So the process is working. The problem is that Reid and Obama aren't moving. So the Republicans have compromise. Now, compromise sounds like a bad thing because it means that, you know, no one gets what they want, and for us conservatives it means things move more towards the left. But the fact is that a compromise is going to stop the ratchet from moving further left and may crank it back to the right a little bit, and you do these things whenever you can get them. That's where we are now. And the idea is that, you know what, a less bad bill is better than a bad bill. When you only control one house and you don't control the Senate and you don't control the executive, then what you need to do is do the most that you can. But that requires unity on the Republicans to vote. And as you can tell, of 46 Republicans in the Senate, you had 27 squishes who caved. Okay? That's the problem. So you've got to hammer these guys and tell them that they got to stand up for principles that are put in the Republican Party platform, enshrined to the Constitution, and precisely what their voting base wants. You've got to tell them that. You've got to send it so much noise that they feel that pressure. But understand something. Don't be a purist. You saw Gregory is trying to accuse Ted of being a purist. Well, Ted's not being a purist. Ted's being practical. He's being practical. He's being conservative in advancing things that will work. If his own party leadership wasn't working against him, it worked in the House. It's not working in the Senate. And that's precisely because senators are basically, because of the 17th Amendment, nothing more than congressmen in extended terms. Congress responds more to you because they've got to be reelected every 2 years. Okay? So it's very important to understand that compromise can be a bad thing if compromise is watering down your principles to the point where they're meaningless and everything goes to the left. But a good compromise, in good faith, is about moving the ball in your direction by giving up some things that you're willing to let go in order to get the very important things you want. A less bad bill is better than a bad bill. Go real quick, and then we'll hear Rand Paul speak about a less bad bill.
Well, the thing that's important to understand about this is that this is just step one, because we still have the budget, the debt ceiling, the budget, and all this other stuff coming. You know, this is just step one in a process, and I think that the Democrats are fighting really hard for no compromise, because they know that they also got the budget ceiling. They got a couple other things going on here that are coming down the pike very soon. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And the important thing to understand is that this is not about this bill. Okay? This is not about this bill. It's not about the continuing resolution. And you know what? Who gives a shit if the government shuts down? It's not going to be shut down that long. It's not going to be 3 weeks. Okay? They're going to get this thing wrapped up in the next few days. Okay? But you have to make someone come to the table. And the only way you do that is to actually not flinch. If you say you're going to do something and then you weasel out of it at the last minute, of course Obama and Reid aren't going to compromise. But here's the thing. The Democrats and Obama are actually weaker vis-a-vis American general public right now than they've ever been. Why would the Republicans not actually stand firm? Well, unless they happen to actually be Democrats within the Republican Party. You've got to make them feel that heat and realize that standing on these principles here and now, all right, delaying Obamacare, all right, not defunding it, delaying it, funding the military, keeping the government open, okay, and removing the medical devices tax and protecting Americans' conscience, that's a compromise, and that's one that Reid and Obama should be able to live with. You just got to push them into this direction the way that Newt did it to Clinton, okay? But this is what sets up the conservatives to be a more dominant voice, the Constitution to actually be working and be on the table again, okay, for all the other things that are coming up. don't forget, like Chris said, we've got the debt ceiling issue. We've got a real budget because this continuing resolution, the Senate version that Reid passed, only funded things till November 15th. This one goes till December 15th, so they've still got to work on that to get actually beyond the date and actually have a budget. Furthermore, you've got a billion other things coming up. Syria is not off the table. The war is delayed. It's not over. That's going to come back. The NSA spying, the IRS abuse, Benghazi. All of these other things are still unresolved and still out there. If you want to see action on them, this is the issue that strengthens the conservative A-team and overpowers the Republican Surrender Caucus. That's how important this is. I don't think it's about health care or insurance reform or Obamacare. This is about whether this Republican Party, which is the only wing of the duopoly that has any conservatives and libertarians in it, is going to be a dominant political force, or if it's going to be controlled opposition for the next 40 years and you might as well give up because you'll be living in a welfare warfare state for the rest of your life. Here's Rand Paul talking about why a less bad bill is better than a bad bill.
This morning with Kentucky Republican and key Tea Party leader Rand Paul. He is in Bowling Green this morning. Senator, thank you so much. Let me just ask you flat out, are you willing to take the blame if the government shuts down?
You know, I've said all along it's not a good idea to shut down government. I've been saying that for months. But I also think that it's not a good idea to give the president 100% of what he wants on Obamacare without compromise. We've been offering him compromises. Many on his side say there are problems. The Teamsters said there are problems. Warren Buffett says there are problems. Even former President Bill Clinton says there are problems with Obamacare. Why won't the president negotiate and come to a compromise on trying to make Obamacare less bad?
Well, Senator, I kind of take your point, and I think a lot of people agree there are things to be done about this law that could make it better. But how can you hold the entire federal government hostage just because you want to postpone his signature achievement? He's not going to do that. The Senate is not going to do that. You know that, and you know even if they did, that the president would veto it. I mean, isn't this just an exercise to accomplish nothing?
Well, I guess, Bob, what I don't know is, see, he already, by executive fiat, has delayed the employer mandate, which is a key component of this. We think that is going outside the Constitution and that the president's not allowed to write legislation. So all we're asking is, if he thinks it's so messed up that he's going to delay a big part of Obamacare on his own, and it looks like maybe he's going to do some special favors for the unions, why don't we actually bring it to Congress and try to figure out how to meet somewhere in the middle? But see, he's saying 100% of Obamacare or the highway. The president's the one saying, I will shut down government if you don't give me everything I want on Obamacare. That to me is the president being intransigent and being unwilling to compromise.
But the law has already been passed, Senator. Let me just ask you this question. You know, I'm old enough to remember when Barry Goldwater ran for president in 1964, and he said, I'd rather be right than president. And, you know, he got his wish. He lost in a landslide. Aren't you and the other Tea Party leaders leading the Republican Party to the same fate?
Well, see, the thing is that once things are passed doesn't mean they're set in stone and no future Congress will look at them. For example, when Reagan came in, the rates had been 70% on the top bracket for 40 years, but he didn't say, oh, that's the law, so we can't readdress it. Obamacare was passed, but the public has a great deal of misgivings. I have a lot of misgivings. I'm worried that there won't be many choices left, that you're going to destroy the individual market. If I want to go out and buy a high-deductible plan, Obamacare is making that illegal. So I think there's really a problem with limiting people's choices, and we should continue to have this debate. But it's the president who's refusing to come to the negotiating table. We've now offered a new compromise. Our new compromise is not getting rid of his signature achievement, but delaying it to make sure that it doesn't totally destroy the insurance market in our country.
Let me just ask you this. Is there a way out of this? Democrats are not going to go along with postponing health care. You don't have the votes to override a veto. Is there a third way? Is there some way to prevent the government from having to shut down and putting 800,000 federal workers on furlough? These are people, many of whom work by the hour. They need the money. This is really going to hurt them. Is there a way to prevent that from happening?
How about they get a real job?
I think there is a way, and I've been saying all along that we should negotiate. See, historically, Bob, the way it worked is if the House was Republican and passed something and the Senate was Democrat and passed something, you had a conference committee, equal number of Republicans and Democrats, and you hashed out your differences. Why don't we have a conference committee on this? You could appoint one today. They could meet tomorrow and hash out the differences. That's the way it's supposed to work. Republicans and Democrats are supposed to find a middle ground, but right now it's the president saying, my way or the highway, if I don't get everything I want, if I don't get Obamacare that Democrats passed without any Republican support, the Democrats are saying they're willing to shut down the government.
But you know, Senator, with all due respect, it's a little more complicated than that, because you've got not just Republicans versus Democrats, you've got Republicans versus Republicans. You've got Senate Republicans versus House Republicans. You've got a Republican Senator, Ted Cruz, who's advising House Republicans to go against their own leadership in the House. So it's going to take more than a conference committee.
Good.
I mean, you'd have to set up 15 or 20 committees to try to resolve all the controversies that are going on right now.
That's crazy.
I mean, do you disagree with that?
Easy. Well, I didn't say it was going to be easy, but I would say that that's the way you're supposed to hash it out. The president shouldn't get, 53% of the public voted for the president, 47% or so voted for Romney. In the House, the majority of the House members are elected by Republicans. Why would it not be that we defend what we support, the president defends what he supports, and that we have to find a compromise? The president's saying, no compromise, I will not touch Obamacare. But the interesting thing is, he's amended Obamacare probably 15 times already, but he does it without any legislative approval, which we think is unconstitutional. But it's also showing that he's just going to fix the law on his own without any approval of Congress. We think he should come to Congress. We should negotiate how to fix or make Obamacare less bad. We are the party that's willing to compromise. They're the party that says, no way, we're not touching Obamacare.
Okay. So here's the bottom line again, and Rand was awesome, and I know people are getting on the Rand side and the Cruz side, and that's going on, and I don't take that position.
They're on the same
I think
side.
They're both awesome. Yeah,
they're
both awesome, and let 2016 work itself out. But what Rand is saying is very true. We have a majority in the House for a reason. People voted for him. And they're supposed to be doing this. This is the party. This is the platform. This is what they were elected on. So they're supposed to be fighting this thing. And the damn senators are too, except we got 27 of them that, have been in there too damn long, and they forgot what they're fighting for. Because if it wasn't for those 27 senators, this would be a whole different conversation right now. And that's the bottom line. And so, this whole thing, it's these liberal media talking heads trying to chip away at a handful of principled people who are standing on what they believe in and are doing what their constituents voted them into office to do. That is so key to understand that and to stay on that and never lose it in while you're listening to the debates and the battle going on, because that's all it is. It's a joke. And what Rand said is so key. The president has never, people were amazed. We had to have 3 days of news on it a while back that the president even met and had dinner with some of the Republicans, after 4 frickin' years in office. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You've got to look at the bigger picture when you look at this whole battle that's going on. And Tex covered a lot of good stuff on this. This is just the tip of the iceberg. And what they're doing is they're empowering I was going to say they're empowering the base, but what they're really doing is the base is empowering those who are willing to be empowered.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, that's a distinction there. But they're leaders that are standing up. This is the future of I don't want to say Republican Party, because I'm not like pro-Republican per se, but, this is the future of the conservative movement. And I don't care if they're libertarians or Constitution Party or independents or Republicans. These are the kind of people we want in power. These are what move us. Because here's the challenge. And the media, these media personalities, they get paid big money, especially ones that have been in there for a long time. And they're not living in the same world that you and I are living in and the rest of us. So these congressmen and these media head, talking heads and these consultants and all these people that, you know, bleed, you know, feed off the government tit in, back in your country where you're at, they are not impacted by this like we are. This is what these people were elected to do. They're, and this thing is bigger than just a healthcare debate or you know, even if premiums rose 20%, it's much bigger than that. This is trillions of dollars in tax increases. This is a $2.6 trillion additional budget issue to our country over the next to implement this monstrosity that they said was going to be $900 billion. This is Medicaid being cut. You know, this is Medicaid being cut. This is an invasion into your privacy like none other. And there's so many important talking points on this issue that are not covered in these interviews because they're there to destroy, you know, and to chip away at the armor of these people who are fighting this battle. But for those of you or us who have been researching this, we've seen all the data, you know, whether all the companies that are cutting back and 70% of the employment gains have been part-time. And I mean, it's just the data is out there. The problem is you're not going to hear it in the major media. Anyway, go ahead. Do your thing.
And we'd love them to hear it here, but we are running out of time. Folks, remember, throughout September, we did an extra show every Thursday. There's four of them. Just go to the Tex and Rex show page, click on the picture of Bob Corker, that insipid rhino squish, and all four of them are there where we dissected all of this stuff that we're talking about. The important thing to remember now, and make sure you check out Coalition of Freedom because there's a lot of good analysis there. There's a whole thread on Obamacare and a whole thread on the votes. So go check them out, Coalition of Freedom at Facebook. Here's the thing. This is going to be deliberated tomorrow. There's likely to be a vote. The question is, are the Republicans going to be a surrender caucus again, those 27 squishes, or are they going to stand with Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and Rand Paul and Jeff Sessions as conservatives and hold the line and force Harry Reid to have a 60-vote threshold in the Senate? They think that that means that they'll be shutting the government down. No, that's not true. What you'll be saying is we want a say in the continuing resolution. The Republicans have already compromised by coming and giving concessions that things that your party has agreed with in the past. Why are you trying to shut down the government, Mr. Reid? Why are you trying to shut down the government, Mr. Obama? That's what they have to do. Now, the government's going to shut down. That's a fact because it'll shut down at midnight tomorrow. And even if they vote tomorrow, it's going to shut down. Okay? Don't freak out. All that means is that federal employees, you get furloughed for the rest of the week. So it's a week off. Okay? No essential services are stopped. The military, there is a separate CR to fund that. My guess is that the Republicans will actually be unified on that one, so that one will go through with some Democrats who are going to be afraid to defund the military, you know, by basically saying we want to fund this crappy law, but we won't fund the military. So that's likely to happen, so military is going to be fine. Don't freak out. It's not going to be a big deal, but a shutdown would actually force Obama and Reid to negotiate with the Republicans, as the Constitution demands. And it would actually strengthen the conservative position because that is how you're going to move the ball back towards a Republican Party that is actually conservative. And don't think that if you move it back towards that you want anything because you have to keep fighting to keep moving it and to keep it there because it was moved there by Goldwater. Oh, no, Goldwater lost. Right, but he teed it up for Reagan. Remember, in 76, Reagan was almost the nominee, but the Rhinos won, just like they did in Tampa 2012. But in 1980, they were surprised. They were expecting Mr. Voodoo, Eat My Shorts, Economics, Bush to be president. They got Reagan. Reagan was reelected. Then, of course, Bush ran as a Reaganite and completely governed as a rhino, right? And then we got Gingrich. Gingrich brought in the majority for the first time and actually got conservative things done. Do you like all of them? Probably not. Were they all totally conservative? No. Did the party move to the right enough? No. Did the country move to the right enough? No. Okay, but it was moving in that direction. So what was the response of the Republican Party? They got rid of Gingrich. They brought in Rove. They got in compassionate conservatism. They had to have the Supreme Court give them the presidency. They went on a drunken spending spree that brought in a Democrat Congress in 2006 and delivered the White House to a community organizer with no experience who has a Marxist domestic agenda and supports a Muslim Brotherhood foreign policy into the White House. You can actually blame the rhinos for Obama. That's how bad this is. So we got to move it back. Make your calls, 202-224-3121, and go to www.don'tfundit.com. Don't feel dejected. The wind is at our backs. This is the time where we can win. All right? This is a victory that the Surrender Caucus can just snatch defeat from, unless you pressure them. So pressure them, pressure them, pressure them. It's the most important thing that you can do. Don't get confused by the terminology, the procedures, and all this stuff. Just trust Ted and Rand and Mike to know what they're doing. But you follow their lead and be a leader and bring other people on board and send in a grassroots tsunami so that the numbers are with them, because that's what makes the rhinos quake in their boots. That's what pushed Boehner and Cantnot and McCarthy over to the right, and that's why we have a fairly good CR. It's not great. It's not perfect, but it's certainly better than a fully functional battle station that's going to blow up your planet called Obamacare. You can delay it, and then you can work on fixing things as we move forward, and this will be an electoral victory for conservatives within the Republican Party in 2014. It all begins right now. It's all up to you. Do it for yourself. Do it for your family. Do it for your community. Do it for liberty. We'll be back next week. This is Rex and Trog signing off.
The flames of liberty never die.
Joining us right now, the former House Speaker, Newt Gingrich. Newt, as you know, House Republicans, they've voted 40 times to repeal, to get rid of Obamacare. It's not going anywhere in the Senate. Certainly the president would veto that. And now some Republicans are saying they are ready to shut down the government to do away with Obamacare. You believe this is a mistake. Tell us why.
Well, I don't think we should shut the government down. I think we should finance all of the government except Obamacare. And I think we should be prepared to send a bill. The House Republicans ought to send a bill to the Senate that says, here's the entire government except Obamacare. And then I think Senator Reid and the president have to decide how big a crisis they want to create, but make clear that it's their crisis. It's not. There's no desire by Republicans to shut the government down. But I also think, and I've been here in Boston talking with the Republican National Committee, we need to offer a better future in healthcare. We've got people like Dr. Mike Burgess, a congressman, Dr. Tom Price, a congressman, Dr. Bustani, a congressman. We have a number of people with good ideas, and we should solidify into a Republican better future in health alternative and say, look, would you have this personalized medicine future or the cancer of Obama? And I think that would put us in a much stronger position to then force the fight over Obamacare in October.
Because you know the president would veto any legislation that wouldn't fund Obamacare, and in effect, there could be a government shutdown. You lived through two government shutdowns in the 90s. As you well remember, Republicans paid a huge political price for both of those shutdowns.
You know, I thought so at the time, and then as I got away from Washington and was no longer speaker and thought about it for about 2 years, it occurred to me that that's all nonsense. The first reelected House Republican majority since 1928 occurred after the shutdown. And so I've always wondered, what is this big price that we paid? We got reelected. Nobody had been reelected since 1928.
Well, the big price, Mr. Speaker, was that Bill Clinton was reelected in 1996.
Well, but I don't think Bill Clinton was reelected because of the shutdown.
I think that was that was certainly a major part of it.
But he also signed the welfare reform bill.
That was important as well. But he certainly benefited dramatically in recapturing the White House for 4 years because of those two Republican-led government shutdowns.
Well, all I would suggest to you is that there were a lot of different factors in the presidential campaign, but the people who were directly responsible for the shutdown got reelected. And then nobody had been reelected. You know, incumbent presidents getting reelected is a lot more common than Republican Congresses getting reelected was in 1996. And yet almost nobody in the media wants to look at why Clinton got reelected, so did the House Republicans, and so did the Senate Republicans.
Well, those are fair points.
The establishment will grow more and more hysterical the more powerful Rand Paul and Ted Cruz become, and they will gain strength as it's obvious that they're among the few people willing to raise the right question. And I consistently have been on the side of having the courage that Rand Paul and Ted Cruz have, and I think it's sad to watch the establishment grow hysterical. Christie is a very good governor of New Jersey. Apparently, in a New Jersey tradition, he thinks that bluster and strong language without facts can carry you a long way.
10 years ago, a crack commando unit was sent to prison by a military court for a crime they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from maximum security stockade to the Los Angeles underground. Today, still wanted by the government, they survive as soldiers of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can hire the A-Team.
I love it when a plan comes together. love it when a plan comes together.